As I indicated, we have produced evidence to support about 11 referrals to the National Prosecuting Authority. We're naming just one matter there because the other matters have not yet been charged, the accused have not been charged and not in court yet. So it was prudent that at this stage we shouldn't mention the parties involved. There's a matter against Suli Mutweni of fraud. This related to a fraudulent award of relating to the bursary scheme of the corporation. That matter is in court. We've been informed that it's also pending. As we know that the court processes at times do not go as we envisage, but we are happy that that matter is receiving court attention. So in respect of the other 10 matters, they involve private companies who contracted with SABC. Those matters, as the criminal process would say, we also recommended that the companies or the directors be charged. So it's a director and 8 former SA executives, SABC executives, as well as former SABC directors, executive and non-executive. The combined value of the cases at hand is about 267 million. As we say, the charges vary from theft, fraud, contravention of the Companies Act and PFMA. The referrals were done in May, September, November 2018 already. So we are following up with the NPA to make sure that the prosecution results. In this regard, the last sentence on that slide, we have arranged with NPA and a dedicated prosecutor has been allocated to deal with all the SABC prosecutions. So we are happy that there should be traction soon on those matters. We indicate that the investigation has produced evidence to support about 24 disciplinary referrals arising out of the matters investigated. The evidence implicates about 14 officials whom have all been charged, involving 7 SAB executives and 8 SABC officials. 7 of these matters have been finalized. The latest referral was on the 6th May 2019, and a board member in respect of the SAB security contract. The impact of the SAU disciplinary referrals has been, it resulted in the exiting of some of the officials, and the details are shown afterwards. 5 SABC executives are no longer with the SABC as a result of the consequence management that we've really seen that the board has carried out, and we are happy that the impact is being made. 2 have been found guilty of disciplinary charges, and 1 dismissed and one resigned. 2 resigned in the face of the disciplinary process. 1 contract has expired and was not renewed. 2 SABC officials have been dismissed, found guilty of disciplinary charges. The next slide really just indicates in tabular form those SABC officials. You see there's a person called Kuvendran Padayachi who resigned in the face of the disciplinary process. Suli Mutweni was dismissed. Betty Tugwane contract expired, but there were some findings as well against this person. The contract was not renewed. There's a person called Simon Mulauzi who was the head of procurement. He was dismissed. The next one is Audrey Rafela. She resigned in the face of the disciplinary process. In this regard, we were successful in freezing her pension fund, just so that when there's a finding that there were some recoveries, so that we could also have access to the pension fund. The next person, Anand Modia, was found guilty. In this regard, a final written was issued. The next one is Chifua Mulauzi, was found guilty, and a final written warning was issued. But he has since resigned after that. The next person is Ayanda Mchize, who has been dismissed. So the picture that is shown is that there is consequence management that has been taken. The next slide, and I'm mindful that we were given 20 minutes, without going into detail, it's really the update of where we are with civil litigation matters. In the matter on James Aguma and Lona Vision, this matter was, the contract was set aside in this regard. On the 11th of May 2018, we submitted evidence to Waxmans, who is also representing SABC, in support of a civil claim against Lona Vision and Aguma. The last bullet point just indicates that while these matters are in court, we are experiencing some delay because of the court processes and the roles, but we have since engaged with the judges, a deputy judge president of the High Court, so that they could do what they call case management. And the case management is meant to make sure that it fast-tracks the cases so that there are no unnecessary delays brought by the parties. But, Honorable Chair and members, we are, together with the Department of Justice, we are finalizing the setup of the Special Tribunal, which could probably be start sitting around October once the regulations have been completed. These matters, those that have not started and are not partly heard, we could consider taking these matters to the Special Tribunal so that we fast-track the recovery of these matters. Again, the next slide is an update of where we are on Vision View. As we say, we filed a notice of motion to have that contract set aside. To date, we have found that the SABC had paid about 34 million of that contract. On the 9th of November 2018, we were successful and the judgment was handed down by the High Court where this contract was set aside. So we can really see some progress in some of the matters, but in the main, we are experiencing delays in the courts. Except to say on this matter that there's an aspect that we were not happy with, where the court had referred the just and equitable order to arbitration in terms of the agreement. So we're taking that aspect on review because we believe it's setting a bad precedent. The next update is around Sikela Kabiso. That's a list of the contracts that were entered into with the corporation. But the contract that is under review at the moment, because most of those contracts either would have been by a fluxion of time been completed. There's one contract on the next slide to the value of 9 million, which we attest as irregular, and we went to court about it. In this matter was also heard, and the application to set the contract aside was dismissed. We are in the process of appealing that outcome. Right, and then the next slide is around the success fee paid to Mr. Mutwening. We are also in court in this matter. Due to the nature of the court process, there has been to and fro between the parties filing those documents, pleas, and all of that. But the overall amount is about 21 million, which we are seeking to recover from Mr. Mutwening. Again, we are engaging with the court officials to make sure that this process does not get delayed unnecessarily. We've also found that there's evidence pointing towards criminal offences committed in respect of the payment of the success fee by two former SABC officials. One current official and two former board members have been referred to the NPA. So we are wanting to follow up on those referrals so that the prosecution can follow. The next slide is around Sule Musenya. I've already updated the board on the committee on this one. This matter is pending in court. We're expecting that there should be traction on the lower part of the slide. We are reporting that the criminal trial commenced on the 4th of September 2019 and was postponed to 30 January 2020. So this really is some of the frustrations that we experience in court, but It is what it is. We really just work with NPA to make sure that there are no unnecessary delays. The recovery of the amount related to this criminal matter is about 45,000 rand, and we will address that as part of this criminal outcome. There are processes in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act where a court can order that that the accused pay back the monies. We also investigated the multi-choice contract. There's two contracts here. There's one contract which was entered into in 2013, and another contract was entered into from 1 September 2018. We investigated the initial contract. So the investigation indicated on that initial contract certain provisions of the expired, this is the expired contract now, certain provisions to have been unlawful by virtue of having been in contravention of the government's prevailing encryption policy at the time, as well as against certain provisions of the Broadcasting Act. However, as we have indicated that any viable legal remedies at this stage, because the contract had already expired, we would be faced with legal technicalities in that space, but we are considering to make findings relating to the either executives or board members under whom this contract was entered. So we will make appropriate findings as we conclude the investigation. Evidence also indicated that the signatories to that agreement were at that stage of the signing not duly authorized to sign it, and that a false or incorrect resolution would have been compiled in this regard. So that is one of the aspects that we would really make sure that appropriate action is taken. In respect of the financial, this is the next slide, in respect of the financial viability of the expired contract, the evidence obtained indicated that it was financially viable at that stage of entering into the contract. However, subsequent events that caused the agreement to result in significant losses, as we said, we are still investigating those aspects and will make appropriate findings. The new contract this was entered into has been entered from the 1st of September 2018 for a period of 5 years. The investigation of this contract, as we indicated, that we deal with the scope of the proclamation, while it falls outside of the scope of the proclamation, when we looked at some of the allegations, we were of the view that these allegations did not justify an application for a proclamation to investigate. The next slide, Chairperson, I'll go quickly. It covers phase two of the investigation. Slide number 29 just outlines those matters. I should have mentioned that this is probably to those members who would have been member of this committee before. They would have heard this before. But we are able at this stage just to indicate that the security contract, which really caused a bit of consternation, we have made sure that we fast track and make sure that we finalize it. The TNA focus, we also give update on that. I'll come to that quickly. We are also looking at irregular appointments of officials, irregular payment of bonuses, irregular expenditure by the corporation relating to the SARS matters. We also investigate conflicts of interest, legions payments of 2.4 million. There's some allegations around the SABC Heritage Thank You Concert to the value of plus minus 27 million, Rapid Blue X Factor season. There's also irregularities relating to some property that the corporation lives in Nelspruit. Irregular payments by Mr. Mutsweding of 1.2 million legal fees, and then various allegations are against some of the Northwest SABC office, including the appointment of the general manager, provincial news editor, officials doing business with SABC, corruption and abuse of SAB resources. The security specifically now referring to the security tender. This slide, slide 31, we say that we, at this stage, this investigation is complete. We submitted interim report. We also submitted the final report in this regard. So the third bullet point, we say we, SIU found that the contract was awarded to them at the time of the meeting. There was financial misconduct and conservation of the TSMA, and all of those matters. Where the TSMA contains a criminal offense, we have referred those matters to the NPA. The next slide, and I indicated that SIU referred disciplinary referrals on 16 May 2019 and the criminal referrals for the conservation of TSMA on the 6th May 2019. We have also made an application to court to be part of this proceeding. The proceedings are pending. At the time of this report, we were still awaiting the court date. Our plea to court is to set this agreement aside because it was awarded irregularly in consideration of the Constitution, TSMA, and SABC court. As I indicated, we have submitted the report on this contract investigation. The next one is around the TSA breakfast contract. On this one, we started looking at the approach which we take, but we have been approached by the State Capture Commission. In fact, my colleague, Mr. Lochetto, who is the Chief Investigating Officer, was at the State Capture Commission yesterday, but because of the timing of their proceedings, they couldn't take him yesterday. And he's due to appear on Thursday. Amongst others, we are informed that the State Capture Commission will look at various aspects of our investigation into SABC, but in particular, they will also indicate what aspects are they looking at and what aspects is SIU looking at, because we are saying we agree that we shouldn't duplicate the investigation efforts. So on this matter, that's one of the matters that we will engage with the State Capture Commission on, and we will then proceed on that basis. In this case, as I indicated, that when we started the investigation, the SABC, out of their own initiative, had already taken steps to cancel this contract. And the TSA then issued a claim against SABC of 144 million. We joined this proceedings with the intention of protecting the interests of the corporation. The last bullet point on that slide indicates that the TSA has now been liquidated, but the legal processes in that space, we are not going to be discouraged by the liquidation process and stop there. We will pursue and make sure that if SABC is one of the creditors that is, then it should also be on the list, an appropriate privatization, so that it can be paid what's due to the corporation. What we are also doing on the next slide, we are indicating that because there were other government departments that were involved in this breakfast session, either state departments or state-owned entities, we wanted to investigate those aspects. So in this regard, we will then seek an amendment to the proclamation so that it can cover that aspect. But as I said, we will do that also with the engagement of the State Capture Commission. Chair and honourable members, the last slide just indicates that as we investigate, like in any other department or state-owned entity, whether the controlling body, which is the board, when we do the investigation,
and where there are irregularities, we also find out what was the role of the board. Have they executed their mandate and their responsibilities as expected, either by the Companies Act or by the Public Finance Management Act? If we make a finding that they did not discharge their responsibilities as expected, we do make the appropriate finding. And depending on the evidence at hand, there is also a possibility that we could recommend that appropriate action be taken, and that would include that the members of the board at the time be declared delinquent. But I should just indicate that that process will also be a subject of appropriate adjudication. Chair, thank you very much for the indulgence. I may have taken more than 20 minutes, but I tried my best to summarize. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sure you understand why we needed to put you under pressure. I'm sure you would have not done this well. Yes, we've done very well. So
thank you
in taking us through. I'm sure that that's a collective presentation from Bethesda and you, even though your colleagues may have not been here by that time.
Yes.
Yes. So if that's the case, I would want to check with members without having to brief from the SIU. I've indicated the issue that related to the NPA, so that I engage the brief with an understanding that the other members are still here for further investigation. It's important that as we engage, we remember that. So I'll take it, the Honorable Member Fagu, Honorable Member Fagu. I have honorable majority as well as honorable McKenzie. If I see you, honorable honorable Madisha and honorable Mulala will be after in that order.
Thank you, Chair. I have one question. My question would be, I see that from the cases that we have investigated, I see some of these cases have been set aside by the court. Maybe if you can just give us a brief, maybe I will have a follow-up on that. Out of the seven, how many have been set aside by the court, and what are the reasons there for? But also, thank you for the work that you are doing. I think as a committee, our responsibility is to make sure that if there's any wrongdoing, those people are the held responsible.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. You should give good morning. Let me say good morning to everyone. Chair, let's appreciate the work that has been done so far. I hear that the investigation is two-phased. Now we are getting the report of the first phase and the briefing into the second phase. But my question, Chair, is going to be around the issue of recovery. That the main issue is to recover, prosecute and recover, which I think it's not their mandate, as they have stated in the document, that their mandate is not to prosecute. They refer to the agencies. My question is around the issue of they are doing this to recover. What happens when that particular person is declared insolvent? Because there is a principle that you use money to get money. And my second question comes to the issue of the Dame Capture Commission, where I think there are still testimonies out there that are done by individuals. I've heard you saying you are avoiding the case of duplication because that would be a waste of taxpayer money. I'm glad that you are taking that into consideration, that there be no duplications. You also highlighted an issue of a special tribunal. I would like you to talk more on that. Whose responsibility is it to establish that special tribunal? What will be the terms of for it? Otherwise, Chair, I know there's what. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to thank the FIU for the work that I've done. I think you have done incredible work, and it is good to see that the rot at the FIUC is being cleaned up. I think it is, having served on the FIUC inquiry and just hearing the horror stories, it's good to see that those issues that were raised, that were serious issues of contention, are being dealt with. So I'd like to thank you for the brilliant work you've done in this regard. I just have a couple of questions for clarity. The report on the security tender, as I understand, it was part of the litigation for the security tender. It's currently in court, the FNDC versus the interim board members, am I correct? Very well afford to give back the money that is required that you have found that they need to be retained from the SABC. So I don't think liquidation in this instance means, you know, the matter is over. We know they're individuals, I don't know where they are, but I think it is absolutely possible, despite liquidation, for you to recover that money. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. Chair, I think after this briefing, maybe firstly let me welcome the report that we received just now and thank the SIU for the work that they've done. Maybe the fundamental issue, Chair, that we should acknowledge is that there is a big trouble of leadership in the SABC. It's a fundamental issue that we must just know. That which means when we deal with SABC, we don't only deal with shortage of budget, but you are also dealing with leadership. There is no leadership in the SABC. And I have few issues, Chairperson. I wanted to know of the regulatory model that you are going to use in this time, but you've answered me along the way. And so I wanted to know what is going to happen to those of their contracts that have been expired. I mean, have not been renewed, because there are those that are implicated in some of the incidents that have happened here, but their contracts have expired and they are not renewed. So what is going to happen to those? Because I see here you are saying on Audrey Rapela, his pension fund is frozen. Once the case is done, then it will then show whether you call a civil claim or a criminal litigation. So of those who are contracts, what is then going to happen? Because I saw that there is one that the contract has expired and the other two have resigned. Yes, so I need clarity on that, on what is going to happen. And Chair, I think maybe we need to also write to the NPA. I know that they apologize today, but we must see them as soon as possible. It is very urgent for us to have a meeting with the NPA so that we get a full report on what is going to happen. Because we are faced here with a very, very serious problem. It is a problem that you can't have so many directors and officials of the SABC who are inflicted in all these things. It is a problem. But for now, I think that is all that I have. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable
thank you, Chairperson, and Chair, if I can just educate and echo my colleague's sentiments on the presentation. It's a thorough and comprehensive. In fact, I had questions, and then you kept answering my questions as you were going through your presentation. Just in terms of the scope, you mentioned that you approached the Presidency in terms of timelines to extend the scope of your work. And you also sort of alluded to uncovering other things that you've been turning over the rocks. If you uncover any other forms of corruption, do you then approach the Presidency in exactly the same way and ask for an investigation to be instituted, or do you consult the Minister, or what is the process around that? Then I noticed, you know, the Companies Act was passed by Parliament for a reason. It was to hold directors of companies responsible for their actions. I mean, I would assume that is the main purpose of that piece of legislation. And the Companies Act is a little bit like the book that, you know, we hear a lot about it, but we never see it in application anywhere. The names of all those companies you listed, behind them they are individuals and they are shareholders. And I think so much happens behind the shield or the mask of a company that we never know the individuals concerned behind that. I'd like to know who the individuals are behind those companies that you listed in your report, and how many of those are you? You mentioned that you've instituted prosecutions, you've instituted prosecutions under the Companies Act. Just to give an idea of your determination, you determined to go after all the directors of these entities using that piece of legislation to actually hold them responsible, because certainly on some of those, look like those directors are very different, not just in the SFC. I think in a national mood at the moment where there's so many people, or there's so much corruption that we see in our society and in our country, and we see no consequence, or we hear of no consequence, or we hear of no conditions and pork chops. So it's really pleasing to see that there's a lot happening. People are being investigated, people are being prosecuted. I think it's a little bit unfortunate, perhaps, that in this report we've seen people appearing in court for amounts of 18,000 rand and 45,000 rand. And we can see that the justice system is working effectively when it comes to the little fish. But clearly it's the big guys that we need to go after, and it's not just going to put on the display price. I like your comments very much on consequence management. That one today to the SABC, I think that we have an over pressure on the Clive Watts running yourself and the DC. There's something there for everybody, barring popularity. And then the second interpretation we've been covered. Thank you very much, James.
Honourable Magistrate. Thank you, sir, and the all members. Like Honourable McCandy say, the chaplain responded to the questions that he had. I think they did very well. We therefore welcome the report and the steps that they have taken thus far. Operation of all the information that had to be looked into. I think that is quite important. But let me start with this theme of NPA. Okay. They continuously have been invited, Chairperson, to the committee here to come and give the report, and to ensure that if there is any pro bono steps that has to be taken to move forward, because there are problems, of course, that could be done, and we could say as a committee, as a matter of urgency, ensure that indeed this at our level. But if they haven't, I therefore wish to say that we as this committee have got to pass a resolution here that says that as a matter of agency, they've got to come here and make sure that there is a response to all this kind of problems and that we're here faced with. Because from what the FIU here has really put forward, it does indicate that in very many instances, the NPA had been actually done that which they were supposed to do. Fewer problems would be experienced at this particular stage. But they defied the committee, which means they defied Parliament, which means they defy the people of South Africa who have employed them. And that is a problem, Chairperson. They must be here as a matter of agency. Now, going back to the report, on the page number 4, you indicate that then under the proclamation number 29 and so on, that you couldn't finalize because of the problem of governance failure. Okay, let me put it there again. I see that it looks like you don't understand that. You talk there about governance a failure. Okay? Through the chair. Now my question is, what do you propose the committee must do? Because if you, for all this, yes, if I was put it in that way, have not been able to acquire that, to ensure that the problems that we here are faced with are dealt with, what is it that you could not acquire? What is it that was actually a problem for you to have this assets taken? What is it that this committee must do to make sure that you have all that? That's the second thing I'm reading, Chairperson. Now, the bank goes hand in hand with the issue of P&A. You have indicated that other government departments are involved. And as a sequence of that, the SIU will seek further powers to take the matter forward. What do you want us to do at this committee? Because we are faced with a problem, but we are referring to the people of South Africa, together with the SIU itself. If nothing has been done after this very long period, after you have been reporting this, after you have collected all the information, etc., what is it that we've got to do as this committee? Okay. Now, the other point that one would like to raise, on page 35, of course, we talk about the board. We talk, we talk about three boards. There was a board with Mutsweni, okay? And then, when 421 was in the committee here, and then thereafter, after we had removed them, we came up with an interim board, which went on so that we could have this third board, which in my own opinion is doing its best. So there are three boards, okay? Now, the problem that we want to believe, and that's what we have been able to put in here, concerns the two boards, the first and the second board. And all the monies that have disappeared. I know the interim board, some information did come that this contract and so on, became a problem. I know that Matata Zedu and other people have responded to say no, etc. But then the point through you, Chair, is that insofar as the first board was concerned, we all agree as this, a committee, as parliament, as the South Africans, that that board had done horrendous things, and hence we have all this amount of money that has disappeared here. Okay. Now, the question is, are you then referring to a both boards, the first and the interim, number one? And number two, the money that have disappeared, what do we do? Because we want that money back. You talk about millions and millions. For example, this fellow, this one, Mutsweni, who got millions, just into his pocket for having been in that particular position, whereas the ordinary workers in that particular institution will be getting 8,000 rand a month, and he would be getting more than, as you say, just a pocket money of 20 million or whatever. Now, these are horrendous, kind of situations that we have. What do you propose we should do? Now, I want to say, as we end, the issue of TNA liquidation. Okay. kindly expand a bit on that, so that we are able then, as a collective, we can be able to take a resolution. But then I want to say that you are correct. One is quite happy that a good work has been done, but one is not happy, Chairperson, through you, that the MPA does not respect the people of our country. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. And honorable members as well, Ntatumuthi. And I think, firstly, I must say that we appreciate the fact that there is progress, at least visible progress, as well, on your part, as I say you. And I think the other legs of the justice systems must also come and put their side so that at least we can have an overall picture, because you can only go as far as that investigation, and then beyond that somebody else must take the bait. But I also have some few issues that I wanted to raise. The first one is that I think on the PLA issue, my colleagues have already raised some concern on that. You are saying that it has benefited in the excess of 200 million. And you have also responded on that, on how you're taking the process forward. But I want to know whether SIU, are you getting the necessary support from other institutions, possibly MPAs is one of them that has been noted. And have you tried to find out what is the quicker way? Because in terms of the overall report, the court processes are a bit delayed. Can't we find a better way together with the Justice Department so that we can speed up these issues? Because it's in the interest of South Africans that the SABC must stabilize this quickly as possible, so that we don't have all these stories about the SABC. So I don't know, but I'm thinking that maybe together we can find a way of speeding up some of those crucial cases that we think are delayed in court. But the other area that I wanted to raise is in relation, I agree with the principle that that money stolen must be recovered. But there's also another side of it. You may spend more money to recover less. So how do we balance that so that we don't go out to recover 500 million and spend a bill? Because it would not make sense from where I'm sitting. Not that we must leave people run away with money, but we need to find a way which cases we think we can recover money. And we should not just go all out, only people run after money, and then at the end of the day, after you finish the process, you actually spend more money than the money you wanted. For me, it will not make financial sense from where I'm sitting. So I'm saying maybe in future, when you report about the recoveries of money, also show an indication that far, this is how much we spend looking for how much. So that we are not just, I don't know is the correct way to, if I was not in this platform of using. So I'm saying we need to say this is the cost that we have lost, that we need to recover. This is the cost of litigation on our side. so that we have a clear picture. And then the other area that I wanted to comment on, it's on the, I've seen there's a new tendency in the public service. I don't know how we're going to meet that. Maybe we need new proposals. Somebody has looked at and then he resigned. I know that you can cut in criminal, but we need to find a way, because most of the people just need money and then after that retire. An easy way out. So maybe we also need to look at that one, because normally if you take in criminal aid, sometimes it's not very easy because it's very institutional thing. It's not easy, but we need to balance that so that we don't have people who go into state institutions, loot, and then when they realize they have been investigated, they die. And then somebody has run away with murder. And then we spend more money looking after other processes when we could. I think we need to look at other ways of dealing with that. Yeah, I think those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me prefer to say I'll just thank the report by the Special Investigation Commission. It's a good report. I just want to find out two things here from the report. One, if you check the report, there are two SABC, the question of two SABC executives who have resigned in the process of the disciplinary process. Now, I just want to check as to whether this resignation during the process, means that if a person has resigned during the disciplinary processes, whether those disciplinary processes were possibly going to continue or that was the end of it. Because the person has resigned. Secondly, there is also the, on page 14, the referendum was on 6 May 2019, I guess a board member, just a board member. I think it will assist to ask if you can name the, if you can know the name of the board member. I think that was. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your time. On page 12, I've heard that all these contractors the age of the team of police. But I just want to check whether at any payback that we expected from these companies. And we all know that infant that you came from. Where you take not properly, you have to pay back. Or the issue is this certificate. I'm just checking because I know that the investigation is completed, which is the way the job was done.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me greet all the members on both sides, the officials and also the honorable ones. Also, let me say thank you for the presentation of the report. It's so unfortunate, maybe on the side chair of the NPA because I think it would be much more easier when maybe the NPA also, as we have invited it, was here. But anyhow, there is no trace match. I think the follow-up also we will do. On the side of the SIU, I can see that there is a lot that you have tried to make, but it's so unfortunate on our side also to say wherever where we want also maybe to make some comments. It seems as if it will be much more difficult because now, as you have raised to say, most of other cases are self-judice. But I can say on the side of the proclamation number of 19 of 2018, I can see that you have already submitted and also the time frame there on the 14th of June. It means to our Honorable President, it shows that on that side you have managed to work and also to finalize on that side, irrespective maybe to be also on the side where there are some hiccups, if also it's the side of the subject care. But the other one, we are saying we are anticipated maybe to be completed early in 2020 based on those technicalities to say you can't complete whilst other matters are in that manner. But let me say I would like to thank on the side of the SADC, irrespective it is tough on their side, on based on the issue of the labor. We are trying, my honorable colleague here, she's saying it seems as if there is no leadership there. But let me tell you, I would say, based on those frustrations that are there, they are trying to play their level best. And I would be convinced, as I can see that there is this issue of consequence management that they are trying to play, so it will motivate to say something is being done, they are trying to work maybe harder in order that they can put that SABC into order. But now what I would like to know, on the side, as we are saying, you've managed to work for phase one and phase two, and there are those challenges that the cases are sub judice, which means it's only the part you are not yet already completed everything. You still need to work and also to be assisted by the NPA. We would like to know on the side of the NPA, maybe is there anything that they have given you on your side to say more or less to those cases that you have referred to them? They have already worked how many ones that they have managed to conclude each of, are all of them are still pending because now there is those processes that they are need to follow based on the issue of taking it in high court or in court. So I would like to know, is there anyone that they can say now, but based on those cases, two of them or three of them, we are done. But I can see that there is this issue of trying also to recover. I think it would be much more better not to be relaxed to continue because at the end of the day, we are saying these were the public fund money. So indeed, they need also to play its role where it's supposed to be played. So based on those things, I would say it would be much more difficult because I wanted to go deeper, but now I'm afraid, as we are saying, other cases are subject to care. Thank you, Chair.
And I'll be doing one of your friends to answer. So you're in a situation where maybe a colleague of yours wants someone to clarify, and I think we'll give that opportunity also as you respond. Just as a guide, I usually say that try and stay away from those that may not be in your purview. Matters of the committee have to deal with them as the committee. On the NPA side, as I said, the committee has received a letter. They will just need to hold them to the letter they've written to us of committee for the next appearance. I'm doing this, Honorable Magistrate, so that it's understood that whilst the experience is the best future. So that with us on the sixth hour, we should also give the benefit of doubt that if we have received something in writing that says, I will cooperate, I will work with you, we do not have a staff that says, you are used to doing it. I think that the committee will have to take that that matter up with the NPA. But therefore you can present. That means just one other issue, as you present it, the response to the answer. I think it's very important in the point captured also by Honorable Magician. There have been different boards, and it seems sometimes when we put out statements, it's like the current situation. I'm saying that acknowledging that the current board chair is also present. But I think in your report, you are balanced to say other activities were not even your initiatives, but were the initiatives of the FAPC itself to try and deal with the issue. That was, it's important as you responded to this one. Is there a question that was okay?
I just wanted to add, because the narrative was often confused that what is happening, this kind of investigation implicates the current board and management. I think it's very, very important, as you said, that you investigate your contracts between 2012 and 2016, that we don't blame the current board and management, because I think there's a lot of confusion regarding that. So I just wanted to echo that too.
No, that's fine. I think we've clarified that. In fact, it will also help that you re-emphasize this.
Well, thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. We do re-emphasize that the scope of the investigations do cover the period of the what's referred to as the first and the second board, and the security tender was concluded under the auspices of the interim board, which was the accounting authority, and the irregularities that are committed, then they point to the accounting authority, which was the interim board. The current board is really not, at least up to now, not an effort. We need to be clear about that. Quite a number of questions that have been asked, some similar, but we'll go through them line by line. Now, the question around the contracts that have been set aside, how many has been set aside? Up to now, we've succeeded in setting aside two contracts. So there's two court cases that have been decided in favor of setting aside the contract. And that's the Lona Vision and Vision Vision. So what happens in the legal process relating to the setting aside of contract, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that where there's evidence indicating to irregularity of a particular contract, we take that evidence, we appoint counsel who will go and represent us in court, and we seek two things. I should pause a bit to allow the minister. Contract is set aside, we then continue with the second leg. The second leg is to then have what is called in legal process just and equitable order. And the just and equitable order is for the court to decide what is the amount that is due and payable to the corporation. And the court takes into account various factors. Takes into account the other party would stand up and say, but up to now we have performed so much, we have rendered the service, we should be paid X and so on. So that's the engagement between the two parties in satisfying the court. We will argue that so much has been spent under an irregular contract and has to be paid back to the corporation. That's our argument together with the FAC. Obviously the other party would argue different. So those are the two steps. So in the contract that we have mentioned, in the Vision View contract, which was to the amount of 23 million, that contract has been set aside. So we will then go to the second leg of the legal process, is to then get a just and equitable order to pay back. So the language used is that, yes, we require them to pay back in the Vision View as well. So those are the court processes. The recovery, so in the SIU business, these are the three main outcomes. The main outcome is to recover the money lost in the civil process, and this is the process that we've got control over, end to end. The process of instituting civil litigation to recover. That one is within our control from end to end. And that is what includes the setting up of the special tribunal together with the Department of Justice. And I'll come back to that. So the other outcome is the one where we find criminal evidence or evidence of criminal action. In that one, because our legislation doesn't give us the mandate to prosecute, we refer it to the NPA. And in terms of our legislation, it says once the NPA receives that referral, have to deal with it in a manner that serves the public interest. That's what the law says at the moment. But when you unpack what it means by the public interest, it really says the NPA should do what is expected of them in executing the prosecution mandate. They have to look at our evidence, they have to decide whether there's sufficient evidence to institute prosecution. So, in this regard, we have been engaging with the state, with the prosecution, and we need to just state that we have seen renewed attention to cases that SIU has sent to the NPA. We have agreed with the NPA that they'll prioritize some of the cases. All of the cases are important, but we say, let's see the criteria to which we can prioritize the measure of public interest, the amount involved, and all of those. And the SAPC matters are some of those that we require as an NPA to prioritize, including some of the health matters, and I will not go into details on some of the other matters relating to state-owned entities. So the other referral is the referral for disciplinary process. Those matters we have referred to the board as the accounting authority, because they, as the accounting authority, are required to take disciplinary steps. So we have seen that matters that we have referred to the board, and the chair sits here, we have seen traction in those matters where consequence management has been meted out. And this is borne out by some of the cases that we're reporting to the committee. There was a call to bring the committee around what's happening to the special tribunal. The president signed off on the special tribunal, and the proclamation was issued in February of this year. So that process was initiated as a result of the acknowledgement that our cases are facing delays in the ordinary court. And we then sat down, and it was appropriate that this special tribunal, because it's provided for in our legislation, to be set up, and we were quite happy that the president signed off. Where are we now with that? Because it is the responsibility of the Department of Justice to set up that special tribunal, the process is really at an advanced stage, and we are just at the stage now. All the logistics are in place. It's really left with the regulations and the rules of the court. The regulations have to be signed by the minister, and the rules of the tribunal have to be signed by the tribunal president. So we have engaged on the draft rules and regulations, and we are expecting that they should be signed off anytime soon. The minister answered a question in this regard, which was raised in Parliament. The rules have been drafted with the assistance of counsel, and we expect that they will be finalized anytime, and then the court, the tribunal will then start functioning. We have got cases that are ready. We've got cases in our books, cases to the value of about 14.7 billion, which has to be recovered. But not only for SABC, I must say, all the cases on our books. We will, when the special tribunal kicks off, some of this SABC civil litigation. But the qualification there is that we have to engage with the court, engage with the other parties, so that we've got the agreement to take those cases out of the ordinary court into the special tribunal. We are of the view that special tribunal will speed up the recovery and recover these monies that are so due to the corporation. There was a question around what happens if a person has been declared insolvent. Because that process is a legal process, we always look at and the question raised by the honourable member in terms of having to always bear in mind that we should not, at the end of the process, come back with a hollow order. The order that says Mr. or Ms. X has to pay X amount, but in the process has been declared insolvent. As the court would always say, you can't draw blood out of a stone. So we don't want that situation where the court makes an order and we are not able to recover at all. So, in the process, when a person is declared insolvent, and that is a legal status, that you can conduct a business as a person, you can't enter into contract, you don't have, in fact, your liabilities exceed, if any, the assets that you may have. But what do we do in our case? That we satisfy ourselves that the person, him or herself, cannot pay back, the person does not have assets, so that we are able to state in our books that there is nothing that we can recover from X or company X. So we've got our chief legal officer here. Not sure if he's able to add on, but that's the position that we take. Just through you, Chair, if I can give him an opportunity just to satisfy the committee.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We're not surprised by liquidation applications and our open investigation. I echo what the executive says. This geared to recover from the company as well as. As referred to by the Honourable Member, the companies act by piercing that corporate veil to get behind the company to the directors or members that were perpetrating the conduct. So, in terms of actually, it's a two-legged approach to the liquidation, we compelled in terms of the Insolvency Act to discuss, which is just a technical term, to recover first what we need from the company based on the contractual value. If that is not the second leg is to go against the individual resource. That is the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. So, in a sense, we will satisfy ourselves that there is absolutely no assets or monies that can be recovered from a person or a juristic person, in this case, the company. And as my colleague says, if it's a juristic person, the company, we will go behind the declaration of insolvency and check who are the directors, and then take it from there. The issue around the security tender, has been finalized, and indeed the report has been submitted to the president, and the outcomes are now being patient. Right. We have made all these referrals as part of that investigation, civil litigation, criminal referrals, and disciplinary process. In line with what I've said before, we have joined the civil litigation that is underway with the purpose of getting the contract to be declared null and void and set aside. And again, we will go to the second leg here that says, what is it that the corporation has lost and what is it that is due and payable back to the corporation? In that regard, we are saying, who was the accounting authority when this matter was concluded irregular? What was the responsibility of the accounting authority? That is the governance part. We are saying that the accounting authority, if it's a controlling body, which is a board, what is it that they were supposed to do? What is it that they have not done? And in that way, we then pronounce ourselves like we pronounce ourselves in the case. And due process will take its course. So we're waiting for a court date so that matter can be ventilated at court. And we're still red stamped by our findings in that regard. Yes, we have looked at irregular appointments and irregular employment. We have said that in the case of Mr. Mutweni, that some of the appointments that we found to be irregular and should be dealt with, and some of the increases that he gave to the staff that were not due, and they are part of the recovery that we have instituted against you. Honorable member, from them you mentioned around the structure and the appropriateness of the structure. That is really not the scope that we are focused at. But we expect that the corporation, as part of its review of the business, would probably have done that. And it's really not probably our domain to pronounce conclusively that the structure was appropriate. In business terms, they would say the structure follows strategy, so it's for the board to say, is this strategy appropriate for the corporation, and is the structure appropriate that would support the appropriate strategy for the corporation. I would pause at this stage and say that would probably be appropriately responded to by the accounting authority. Did you find bloated structure? I think when this is probably still related to the structure question. But I need to just indicate that as we finalize this overall investigation, and this is about the governance failure part, we have an investigation focus area which focuses on investigating the governance process. And this investigation would, amongst others, indicate to us where were the governance inefficiencies stroke failures, so that we can make appropriate findings and appropriate recommendations to the corporation. So the governance failure reference was in that regard, that we have not finalized the overall investigation because we are still focusing on some of the ultimate investigations. The issue around the multi-choice. As we finalize the investigation, we will indeed focus on not only on the part of the board that was in place at the time. We will also focus on whether the evidence discloses any wrongdoing on the part of magistrate. And if we do that, will make an appropriate finding. And as I indicated, any irregularity that was committed in the corporation, then we will also look up and say which board was in place at the time. And then we will make appropriate finding with specific reference to a particular board. There was a question around TNA that has been declared insolvent. It was then bought by Mr. Mani. Whether the action will be against him or against the group. Again, this is it's a legal process. As our chief legal has indicated, we will not just end there. If when you take over a company, there's this legal saying that you take it over with its liabilities and so on. So we will take into account that legal process. That when you've taken over the company, you've taken it over with its good and bad, so to speak. But it doesn't end there. As part of our investigation, we also determine, and it doesn't only happen in this investigation, it happens in various investigations. If the evidence points that money would have left the country, that been taken elsewhere, and already we've got some indications in some of the cases, we then look at what the legal instrument calls mutual legal assistance. And this is the mutual legal assistance which the country would have with another country where the evidence points that the money would have gone to. So based on that instrument, we are able to then start the process. It's quite a lengthy process. The NPA comes in as well to afford us to trace the money and make sure that the monies are followed through and returned ultimately. I would like to just indicate the question around the leadership at SABC. We will not comment on that one yet. I think some pronouncements were made, but our observation is that the current board has really indicated that when we refer, at least in the matters that we refer, that there has been that traction, there has been that willingness and commitment to make sure that the matters are attended to. Those whose contracts have expired, there's about four names that my colleague has indicated to me. If, and this is the phenomenon that we have seen in various investigations we do, that you would have officials when disciplinary process commenced, they resign. And the resignation in terms of the Labor Relations Act, only terminate employment relations. So from a legal perspective, when a person has resigned, you can't really take an employment relation action, which is the disciplinary, because the employment relations would have ended. But there's two actions that you can't run away from: criminal action and civil recovery. And hence, there's a number of about four executives whom we have instituted civil litigation against them personally. Whether they've left the corporation, we will continue to pursue them. And where there's criminal process, we will ensure that the criminal action is taken against them. The scope of the proclamation, once we have the proclamation signed by the president, the proclamation has got a schedule. And that schedule is, in essence, the scope of the investigation. It's got a timeline and it's got focus areas. The intention of the legislature was such that we do not go over the scope. But correctly, as the members would have said, that as we start the investigation, we continue to receive allegations, like we have seen in the case. But we do, then we sit down with the allegations. If they do fall within the scope of the proclamation, we proceed and investigate. If they do not fall within the scope, so that we are not told or challenged that we are acting, as they would call it, ultra vires. We then approach, we draft the proclamation amendment, it goes through the process signed off by the president so that we can appropriately cover that aspect as well. The names of the companies that are directors, this indicates that the companies that we have identified as having been awarded contracts irregularly, we also will go after the directors if the evidence points to wrongdoing on their part. So this is a holistic investigation, so that we do not let them off the hook, as it were. Related to the consequence management, we have noted the members' comments that we've seen in the criminal case, one of them is about 45,000, and there's another one. So the principle that the member indicates is that the consequence management should cut across, whether it's junior officials, executives, or the accounting authority, or any other person, irrespective of the seniority. So we have noted that in terms of prioritization of the cases with NPA, those are some of the matters, factors that we look into. So we'd like to make sure that the consequence management is meted out to anyone who should be held accountable, irrespective of their station in life or their station in the organization. There was a few questions related to NPA, and we have noted that they also informed us that they've got a strategy session on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we would like to really just mention to the committee that, as I said, we have seen a renewed will on the part of NPA leadership to attend to the matters that we have referred to NPA. In this regard, we have said that we're in the process of revising the memorandum of understanding that we have with them, so that we are able to say how is it that, you know, we can help the matters and fast track them, so that we don't see the delay that we have seen before. So we expect to see the results in that space. I've dealt with the issue around the governance failures on slide number 4. The finalization of the report, we finalized the report on the security aspects. The rationale really for because it was brought to our attention by the board, I would say between the current board and the interim, I can't really recall the exact overlap between the interim and the current, but the chair was there with some of the members who were part of the interim. They brought this matter to our attention, that we must say. So when we investigated, we found that the contract was awarded irregularly, but we have to make an appropriate finding, regardless of who was the accounting authority at the time. So we finalized that. So the overall investigation will be finalized, having looked at some of the final aspects, looked at it phase 2, and we said we will submit the report to the president. But I need to just make mention of this, that the outcomes that we have referred to, those outcomes do not wait until we submit the report to the president, because we have to make sure that action is taken and taken quickly. If there's the evidence before the report is submitted, evidence pointing to criminality, we refer it that way. Civil process, disciplinary. So when we submit the report, ultimately, we do mention that these actions have been referred, have been taken, and so on, so that we don't delay the consequence management being taken. The TNA part, with reference to other departments and other state-owned entities, the breakfast sessions that were held over the years, we've got evidence that indicates that there were some sponsorship money that were paid by the departments and SOEs And we are of the view that that requires further investigation. And this is the part that we are engaging with the State Capture Commission on. So that indeed there is no duplication of that. And as I said, my colleague will appear there on Thursday. Part of what we will finalize is that we will either continue to look at this and the commission investigators will not duplicate the airport. So we will proceed on that basis. The issue around the three boards, I think we've clarified that. Where irregularities have been committed, we will streamline the findings with specific reference to a specific board that was in place at the time. The TNA liquidation, I think we've covered that. If there's still any further questions around that, we will attend to that. Other legs of the justice system, yes. As I indicated, the one leg that we are responsible for end-to-end is the civil litigation, which is where we would like to make sure that the money lost are recovered through the civil process. We are engaging with the NPA to make sure that they also prosecute with regard to the disciplinary processes. We really have seen traction on the part of the board in making sure that this happens. Are you getting cooperation from other justice systems? Yes, I think I've covered that. Measures to speed up the cases? Yes, we have covered that with the LCA. Money stolen to be recovered. The economic factor, the member who raised the question is out of the room. We do take that into account. In fact, one of the aspects that we are covering as we start the civil litigation, my colleague, who is the chief legal, and his team, among others, what they do is to go and check whether we will be able to recover anything, whether assets or money, and there's processes to determine that. So that if we are satisfied that, you know, we might be spending public money to ultimately not recover anything, then we should take a decision. Whether we balance the interest, but there's also the issue around public interest that we take into account. Remember, there's other penalties that the court can mete out on a person that we must also take into account. So we will look at that so that, as the member said, we don't spend, you know, 500 to recover or 10, so to speak. So it is a balance of economic scale that we will continue to do. The new tendency of people residing, and I think we've covered that. What we have done in other government departments and state-owned entities, and there's a typical example now in one of the state entities, that's going to be particular, where a person who had left from another state entity, what the phenomenon we've observed is that they'll probably go out for a while, few months or so, years, and then they'll come in. So we noticed that phenomenon, and we approached the authorities or the counting authority there and said, we've got a matter on X, and we are of the view that if you do reappoint the person, this process is going to fix that. So. And amongst others, this is more the government department. Now we have engaged the Department of Public Service and Administration. There's a particular section of the Public Service Act which allows us to make sure that if a person resigns from Department X to Department B, we are able to pursue that person to ask the accounting authority or accounting officer there to follow up and make sure that they take action. And we have seen that happened in some of the cases. We would like to go further, but we are still considering the constitutionality of that further step, as harsh as it may sound. The point that we are doing this to companies. We are considering whether we shouldn't do it to people. The issue around, I would call it legacy. It happens present in other economic activities where you get listed and so on and so forth, and you are not able to conduct certain actions until you have brought your house in order. So we would like to consider considerations of that sort, but obviously we'll have to make sure that we get appropriate legal advice, so that we would have a list of those people who have made themselves guilty of certain actions that list should reflect, so that it's kept elsewhere centrally. When you do reference checks, one of the areas to look at should be there. But I'm just indicating that it's one of the controls that we have considered. Two SABC executive supervisors during the DC process, I think we've covered that we are following them up on other processes. The names of the board members, we have taken a caution here that in other instances where the matters have not been public yet, and that's why in that case where the person has been charged and appeared in court, we're able to mention the name, where the disciplinary process has taken place, we're able to mention the name. So we will take sort of caution so that we don't create a legal risk either to the person or to ourselves. When they have been charged and the matters are in court, we'll be able to mention the names. Are there any paybacks that are expected from the companies? I think we've covered that. We do expect these companies to pay back the money in accordance with the just and equitable order by the court. We've covered the security tender quite at length. The question of NPA coming to the party, I think we've covered that. Recovery of public monies, yes, we are really mindful that this should be covered. There have been different boards, I think we've covered that quite at length. Honourable Chair, honourable members, that I think we would have responded comprehensively to the question. We can still take further questions if there are any.
Yeah, I'm also aware of the time that we still have another item to get to now, trust but I do see that the advice I would give to him, just back on the point of the attaching the pension.
Okay.
That matter is not being responded to. I think in the main is the principle.
Yes.
On what you use as a determinant to make that decision, especially when it's one case, but you have to apply the punitive action to that. But a lot more things on the tourism.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. When I go through these lists of SABC officials, I know if I get a call from Simon Royal, who says, come and have a cup of coffee with me and let's talk about a communication business, or from Anna Budia, or Mr. Woodsy again, Mr. Keith, I know who I'm dealing with, because these are people and they've been in the media, they've been before the committee, their names are public, so I kind of have a bit of background that I can approach it with some caution. And again, to come back to the companies, we mentioned Geconomics, we mentioned Vision View, Sekela Tabiso, Geconomics. The people that are behind, I presume they might still be doing business out there, doing business with state-owned companies, doing business with my friends. It would be good to know who they are. So just perhaps for the future when we come with these companies, perhaps just to give us a schedule that lists who owns them. And then if I can just praise you again, Albert Fatui once said that Helen Suzman was a bright light in a dark chamber, and the SIU is a bright light in a very dark period of one hand here as well. Just so thank you for the work. Thank you, Chair.
Just respond to that, so I will.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, and thank you very much for that encouraging comment. Attaching pensions, we've actually done it only in one instance up to now. And that's as part of continuing to consider the measures that we take into account to making sure that we are able to recover whenever the process takes place. So this almost is akin to the process that AFU does. It's similar, but different in the sense that we would have done it ourselves. Similar in the following sense, that we would be aware that there's wrongdoing on the part of Mr. or Ms. X, and we are going to institute civil litigation. So, in any manner that we can, to make sure that we preserve either the assets or any of the money, that any manner that is legally permissible, we will do that. And part of our engagement with the NPA is that we would like to see the asset forfeiture unit also, you know, coming through with some of the similar actions. So it would actually take into account what the question that the member said earlier on, that we shouldn't be pursuing a civil litigation when we are going to recover less and spend more. So the attaching of patience has been in that context, that we know that there's wrongdoing on your part, and part of what we want to make sure is that we preserve some of these assets so that ultimately when the court makes finding, we are able to recover some money from you. So as I say, we don't just do it, we go through the legal process. So we go there and satisfy the court that we need to preserve this asset so that when the legal process is concluded, we are able to recover. As I indicate, I compare it with the asset forfeiture unit process. So that the asset forfeiture unit works as follows. They preserve, and then once the court process is completed, they forfeit. So it's a similar principle. We are likely to do it going forward. This was a fact that we have done in this fashion. I'm not aware that it was done before in SIU, but these are some of the measures that we will take so that we are able to preserve the assets so that we avoid hold orders by the court. So on the issue of directors, we've taken that into account. It's a principle that we already take into account and make sure that while we observe the legal principle that that this principle that says you are innocent until court rules, but in the process, as the members indicate, we need to be aware of who was behind this company that either if there's wrongdoing against it or findings against it, so that there's that awareness. But we would do that without pronouncing any guilt or otherwise of the director. Thank you,
Chair. Thanks for the responses. I do take note that the chair of the board is here. But I also protect you that we do not ambush you in anything when there is already a plan with yourselves to also take us through on this matter. So I take it that you've been taking notes. Make sure that when you get back to us, you get that part. I think that takes us to the end of this presentation. We are expected to take another presentation, which will be strictly 20 minutes. So 20 minutes, but I know the changeover. Can I allow the full minutes for the changeover? You know it's the presentation from the council. Glad to allow the other.
Get out of here. So they are sending two people.
No. She was just chatting with
me. Oh, okay. But you're recording.
Pardon?
Are you recording?
Yeah.
You don't see this.
Don't leave with my family.
No, I won't.
Can you wait? I'm on
the line. Unfortunately.
Really? Alright. At least Abalekana get enough for me. But yeah, thanks also your good work. Hey, let's hope that it's gonna come out. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, today, that's why I say everybody there's someone on the side. But otherwise, I think that you're planning ahead. You know, whatever Saba gets, I expect to watch it. But yeah, thanks for the. I hope you give me more help now. Nice gift, by the way. Hey, come on, let's go to the middle of the room. What do you want to do? Yeah. So, we can
Can we get back, members? So I can get the presentation from the pastor. As earlier indicated, as you present your presentation with that intro, of course, if you have a bigger definition, make a little case of the key to do that. As I said, it took you 20 minutes, but I've just been promised that you are likely going to take 15. And that's good news for me. That will be up here on time. That's the silver, that's from the front end. They will actually be cautious, as you say. But the platform is your place.
Thank you. Greetings, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. We will really try to be very brief, Chairperson. I'm Dr. Gavis Mdimweng. I'm the acting Chairperson of ICASA. With me is the Chief Executive Officer of ICASA, Mr. William Tenwepe, as well as the Chief Financial Officer of ICASA, Mr. Teboho Matabane. Of course, we are here representing the authority. It's a council currently comprising of 8 members, 5 of which are women. So in the majority of women, it's cost containment. We manage the patients that come to Cape Town because of budgets. But yeah, indeed, we will work on that. But women are in the majority. So briefly, we'll just look into the presentation. ICASA was established pursuant to section 192 of the Constitution. As we know, the mandate is to regulate the electronic communications and the broadcasting booster sectors in the public interest. And at all times, we strive to ensure affordable services and high quality for all South Africans. The mission and the values that guide us, are outlined, but in the main, we like to ensure that South Africans have access to a wide range of quality services. We are guided, Honorable Chair, by the strategic outcome-oriented goals, 5 of which are investment and access to broadband infrastructure. We strive at all times to promote competition, to ensure that there's a common national identity and social cohesion. We aim to be an independent and credible regulator at all times. And lastly, to improve stakeholder and consumer experience. And this will be through the monitoring of quality of services and stakeholder engagement. Now, it's important that independent as we align with the government priority outcomes. And that we do through Outcome Fair, which speaks to inclusive economic growth. Outcome 6, which talks to economic infrastructure, under which we can locate the things such as spectrum. Outcome 12, around the power and inclusive citizenship. This we achieve through fair processes, adhering to administrative due processes. And then outcome 14, which is around social cohesion and common national identity. Now, we are here for the quarter one performance, and I think this slide summarizes the reality that confronted us in the first quarter. at the heart of it is the issue of increasing, you know, litigation. We exist in a highly litigious space. One move we make is often followed by court papers. So that's the reality in which we operate. And with that comes the issue of funding a budget. It leads to financial constraints due to reduction in budget allocation. Our budget allocations have been shrinking, and we do appreciate that it's not only targeted at ICASA, but it's across the public sector in our country due to the constrained financial or economic situation we find ourselves. As a result of that, we are then unable to appoint expert consultants to execute projects, more so in the engineering and technology space. Because we do have in-house capacity, and we try to rely on our in-house capacity at all times, but you know, there are moments or projects that require some expert assistance. This then leads to deferred procurement, you know, of necessary equipment and tools. We have outdated equipment for quality of service monitoring in the engineering department as an example. This, of course, is not in the public interest, because if the regulator cannot monitor the quality of services, drop calls and all groups that the ordinary members of the public experience, if we as the regulator cannot monitor those, it means we cannot hold licenses as a, you know, accountable. Then there's an organizational moratorium on recruitment, and I mean it's cut across from the department and all other spheres of government where there's some scaling down in recruitment, where we try to prioritize the most pressing vacancies. Now, there's a risk. With all that I've mentioned, there's an inherent risk that we may not be able to complete some projects time at least at all because of the stressed staff resources. And this leads to a highlighting of what we think our target in our annual economic plan, which I must say will be very regrettable considering the upward trend that ICASA has been achieving over the past 3 years in terms of annual performance plan targets. So, indeed, committee members, Honorable Chair, I think there will come a time where we have to dwell into the review of ICASA's funding model. Today may not be the most ideal time for that, but we need to look into those. So I would like to hand over to the CEO to just quickly take us through the exact around the Q1 performance. This was just an overview, and he will just do that very, very briefly. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, and colleagues. Chair, with your permission, there's 9 slides in this section. I will say what I say in 4 of those slides. And the first slide being this one, Chair, which gives a summary of our performance in terms of what was planned for the quarter versus what was achieved. So of the planned target, we achieved 71% that were planned for the quarter, and we didn't achieve 29%. Then what the members should note on this slide is that there are a few programs in respect of which there were no planned targets, and those include corporate services, finance, and human resources. On the next slide, Chair, we thought we should give an assessment of how this quarterly performance compares to the past 4 years. So this is the last year of the strategic planning period. If we look at where we started in 2015-16, looking purely at Q1, the committee will see that we've been somewhat erratic. In 15-16, we're sitting at 33%. The subsequent year, we went to 67%, then we dipped, and we dipped, and then this year, we're sitting at 71%. This is just a comparison of the Q1 performance over the strategic planning period. The next slides, Chair, go into details per program, outlining under each program what was planned and what was achieved. And with your permission, Chair, I think the key focus should really be on those things that were not achieved and what is it that we are doing in respect of recovering performance for those targets that were not achieved. So I wouldn't want to bore the committee with all of that detail. With your permission, then I would then go to the slides that provides a summary that highlights the things that were not achieved, which is slide 18. But the details in respect of each program are outlined under each program. So as I say, I think the areas that were achieved are not so much in contention, but it's more the areas in respect of which there was no achievement. So if we were to look at this slide, under licensing, the target for the quarter that related to the development of a conformity assessment framework for equipment authorizations was not achieved. And this target talks to... I apologize, Chair. If I'll go back to this slide where and pause here and take the members through each of the slides. The next slide, after the quarterly comparison, outlines Program 1, which is administration. It outlines corporate services, human resources, finance. It also shows legal risk and CCC. You will note that under that slide, the only program, there were three programs that didn't have planned deliverables, and then we had legal risk and CCC, which achieved all that was planned for the quarter. The next slide summarizes licensing. And under licensing, there is an item at the bottom, which is summarized in the mitigation slide in respect of which there was no achievement. Again, that's the details of the deliverables per quarter in each of the programs. The next slide talks to policy research and analysis, and again, it shows that we had two planned targets. One was achieved and one was not achieved, and we give reasons in the summarized mitigation section.
We completely lost all of it.
Can we go to the slide that had mitigation measures? Yes. No,
go on.
No, no, this is where we are. Chair, the slides after the summary of quarterly performance, those slides go into details about each of the programs. I thought with your permission, Chair, I can then focus on the things that were not achieved so that we do not spend a lot of time going into things that we do not necessarily consider. And that slide is the slide that's on the board. And it takes each of the items under each program that was not achieved and provides reasons as to why there was an achievement and also outlines what mitigation measures have been taken. Are the members with me? Thank you, Chair. So under licensing, the one program that was not achieved under licensing related to the development of conformity assessment framework for equipment authorizations. So this relates to ICASA's type approval mandate. We did not achieve that target. And the primary reason why we were not able to achieve it is because there was an extensive validation exercise that needed to be undertaken from the benchmarking studies that we had embarked on. However, subsequently, as the quarter ended at the end of June, subsequently, the relevant council committee has been able to deliberate on the outcomes of the benchmark studies, and they have recovered and finalized the post-hearing analysis. Under policy research and analysis, the one target that was planned for the year related to the development of a regulatory impact assessment, this was not achieved. And the reason why it was not achieved, Chair, is because as we were going to the planning phase, we had intended to conduct a regulatory impact assessment on digital sound broadcasting. However, it then became clear that there was severe data limitations as the regulatory framework for DSB has not been promulgated. We then had to change focus, and we have decided that we will conduct the RIA on the recently published regulations relating to data expiry, as well as other consumer protection measures under the End User and Subscriber Service Charter. So that RIA process is underway, and we're still hoping that we will complete it by the end of the financial year. The two programs under engineering and technology that were not achieved related to the revision of the frequency migration plan, as well as the revision of the IMT roadmap. And the reason why this were not achieved, Chair, I think the Chair touched on the issue earlier, is that because of the constraints, we have resolved in Q1 that it would not be possible to appoint external experts. We should rather focus on executing the project internally. So amongst the things that we had planned to finalize in the first quarter was development of terms of reference for appointment of experts. But even come to the realization that we would need to use our own internal resources optimally, we then had to forego that target and really focus on developing the necessary project plans and aligning the internal resources and reprioritizing accordingly to ensure that we meet that target. So Chair, those were the four targets across all programs that were not achieved and in respect of which mitigation measures have been implemented. The one other thing, Chair, that we then sought to do from an organizational perspective and as per guidance by Council was to say that we need to improve our monitoring. And one of the things that was requested was that we need to implement an internal early warning system on program progress towards the achievement of quotas. So Council have now requested that we produce mid-quota reports so that Council has visibility of what it is that we are battling with and what is it that requires intervention from Council to ensure that we meet quarterly targets. So with effect from Q2, there is now a mid-quota report that we submit to Council, and we then track the activities for the quota, and we highlight the instances in respect of which there are challenges for Council intervention. Just to give you a sense, as we sit here in Q2, we reported for the mid-quarter, mid-August, on the 15th of August, and in respect of the planned activities for this quarter, we're sitting at about 93%. And we're hoping that by the end of the quarter, the interventions that have been suggested would have been implemented, and hopefully we can see an improved level of performance. Chair, I'm going to pause here and allow the CFO to briefly go through the financial performance. Thank you.
Good day, honourable members, chairperson, colleagues. Chair, starting from first slide, which is our revenue report, just high level, Chair, I'll talk to the total amount in terms of how much we have actually collected. To date, we have collected 105 million, which is 105 million. We estimated a total amount of 95.7 million. Included in this amount we collected was the 10 million that was actually transferred to ICASA by the Department of Telecommunication. I'll talk to that in detail when we get to the summary slide. In terms of the expenditure report, Chair, the next slide. In terms of expenditure, we have so far, Chair, excluding the normal budget, spent a total amount of 108 million. And the budget that we estimated to spend was 129 million, taking into consideration some of the expenses that we accrued at year end. However, 15% of what we have actually planned to spend was not spent. That does not mean we are not committed. This amount is actually committed. So with the special focus on savings, mainly not really underspending, we have a reduced number of people who travel in terms of our international travel. Some of these international engagements were delayed just to make sure that we have sufficient funds for future unplanned or unexpected engagements that we will need to participate on. So this is implemented in line with the cost containment measures. Same applies to conferences and meetings, Chair. We have reduced the number of meetings that are held outside. where possible, we make sure that we use our internal resources and share resources with other state-owned entities where possible. And meetings are only as well where necessary. In most cases, our regional workshops where we don't have capacity within our regional offices. Vacant positions share coupled with the moratorium that was issued by the Minister's office. Internally with the ICASA, this was the second year in light of the limitations that we had in terms of our allocation. We have requested Council to approve a moratorium for a period of 9 months this year. Last year it was a period of 6 months, just to make sure we break even in terms of our budget cut and how much we have available for spending. Moving to the next slide on overspending. Members will note that under legal expenses, we have exceeded our estimates for the quarter. However, this is mainly due to accrued invoices at year end that actually fell through during the first quarter. Some of them are earlier than expected, which were actually paid. Consumer Advisory Panel Chair, which is our CAP panel, we have also exceeded payments in terms of number of meetings, but it must be noted that this is due to additional workshops that were held during Q1. In addition to the ones that were planned. But this is mainly due to the fact that with other programs where we have workshops at regional offices, we take advantage of that and save on the actual venue hire and other related costs. Hence, we then recommended that the CAP members can also participate in those engagements at regional level. Chair, moving to our cash flow summary report, this is just a summary in terms of the movement, but the details are on the next slide. Starting with the opening balance at the end, Chair, I must indicate that if you look at ICASA's financials a few years ago, we used to close on a good bank balance. We used to close on 302 million, that's 2 years ago, which reduced to 190 million last year. And now we are closing for the year ended 31st of March. We closed at 45 million. Which is a significant drop, Chair, mainly due to the funds that were actually returned to National Treasury or retained by National Treasury over the years, Chair. From that 300 million that we referred to, there was half of that amount that was actually retained by National Treasury, which actually led to the challenges I'll allude to in my next slide. So, Chair, included in our bank balance, so at the end, we had a total amount of 15.8 million that we had to honor during the first quarter of the current financial year. That simply means that the 45 million that we have earmarked for projects is now becoming committed earlier than expected. So if you look at the second slide, Chair, where we say our grant allocation was 90.5 million, this also comes with challenges, and it's based on the fact that with National Treasury, you are limited in terms of your quarterly drawings. You are only allowed to draw 40% of your allocation during the first two quarters, and then the remainder of the 6% is towards the end of the financial year. This actually creates a problem, Chair. As much as we want to comply with that, it creates a problem because we can't actually plan accordingly for the first two quarters of the financial year. And these are critical quarters where you have to deliver on your mandate, because most of your KPIs are not actually planned for Q3 and Q4. Q4, you should be finalizing whatever you have planned. So we find ourselves having to move some of the KPIs towards the end of the financial year, which is actually a risk for the organization to achieve some of these targets. This is something that we are raising with our National Treasury. Hopefully one day this will be realized and aligned properly. So the 10 million I've alluded to is that amount that we received from the department. I'll talk to that one on the next slide. So the total amount that was also used to just to make sure that we break even was the 4.3 million that was collected from investment check. When we presented our budget for the current financial year, we did indicate the fact that we had to reduce our estimates for the current financial year because the money that we used to actually invest and generate additional interest was actually returned to National Treasury. So currently we are relying on the funds that we collect from our operators, where we invest for a certain period of time, then surrender back to the National Revenue Fund. As indicated on the slide summary, we have actually under-collected on this one. However, we are monitoring this as and when the operators are paid. So in terms of our actual expenditure, we are sitting at 119, which is now the 108 on OPEX and the additional amount spent on CAPEX, which is clearly indicating that the 119 is higher than the 90 million that we actually got for the first quarter from National Treasury through the department. How did we actually manage the shortfall? It was mainly due to the bank balance that we held over at the end of 45.6 million, coupled with the total amount of 4.3 million that we collected from investment and the 279 that we recovered during the financial year. This simply means that we had money to, yes, cover the shortfall, but that money is not really sufficient to see CASA operating as a going concern for a longer period of time. Chair, moving to the next slide with regard to the implications, we had engagements with the department, both DCPS and DOC, and the National Treasury on some of the issues listed in here, where we are saying this reduction of our allocations will affect this list of projects. However, in terms of our last submission to National Treasury through the department, is on the next slide, the summary to say, based on the initial submission that we presented in December to the DG of National Treasury, we were looking for 27 million just purely on the spectrum auction. So that was based actually on the initial estimates that were done when the spectrum was supposed to be auctioned initially. So we have received the 10 million from the department. However, if you look at the actual amount required, we are looking at a total amount of 34 million. You take out the 10 million that we have received, which is already committed, we are now looking for a balance of 24.1 million. If you look at our allocation, we will clearly indicate that, the total amount that we are actually requesting as an additional allocation in the next financial year cannot actually be sourced from our allocation. Hence, we saw a need to actually write again to National Treasury just to try our luck and see if they will be able to allocate these funds before they finalize our allocation for the current financial year. So the bullet underneath here is just a summary of each and every amount that we need, which can be allocated in the next financial year. That will assist the organization in terms of making sure that we execute this this mandate of project of national importance accordingly and within allocated time check. That is also coupled by some of the projects that the CEO has alluded to say we initially thought we would be able to execute some of this within our the organizational resources. However, there are other limitations that will require us to actually go outside, Chair. So with that being said, Chair, I submit on the finance side back to the Chairperson.
Thank you. And then just two quick slides, Chairperson. They relate to the issue of council performance contracts, because it was also listed in the invitation letter. We've been having engagement with the minister to try and address this issue. I think in the form of letters and trying to set up appropriate meetings or workshops. But this is informed by Section 6A of the ICASA Act, and then the Act says the minister, in consultation with the National Assembly, should establish a performance management system to monitor and evaluate the performance of the chairperson, councillors, and council individually and collectively. Now, just by way of background, this has not been done. It has not been done, not only by the current minister, but even in the past, it had not happened. So councillors have never signed performance contracts or they have never contracted. It's quite a defined process. It's in the Act. There was a performance management system developed around 2011-2012, but it was informed by the government priorities of the time. So I think we would appreciate that the priorities of government right now, 2019 to 2024, are somewhat different, you know, from what they used to be. So the performance management system needs to be workshopped. It needs to be, worked through by the portfolio committee, by the honourable minister, and ICASA can make inputs. And then we need a panel, an evaluation panel, needs to be established so that members of council can then be performance managed. So I think that's just an update, but there has been communication. I think in July, even last month, we've been exchanging letters with the Honorable Minister trying to work towards that point. But the reality is a new performance management system would have to be developed. and that responsibility lies largely around the portfolio committee and the Honorable Minister. But ICASA would then in the process make inputs. And what we have been using, what we have just been using the annual performance of ICASA as councillors to track whether we are leading a winning or a failing organization, if I can put it that way. You know, in the 2015 or so financial year, 2015-16 performance was around 29%. We then started aligning to annual performance plans, and then we've been improving since that time. 2016-17, it was around 70-something. 2017-18, it hit the 80% mark. And in this previous financial year, we've achieved over 90% of performance in the absence of a monitoring system. So I think it does not mean when it did not exist, we were just taking advantage of that. The organization has been growing from an APP point of view. Thank you, Chair. I think I'm just summarizing, and then we can take questions. Thank you.
That's the presentation, honourable members. We'll now take your input. That will make it quick. Can I then take honourable Fag, honourable Tego, honourable Majozi? Joanda, okay, Honourable Mackenzie, and we have Honourable Mulala, and lastly, Honourable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, my question will be around the departing remarks of the acting chairperson. The acting chairperson is raising the issue of performance agreement between minister and yourself as ICASA. I don't know, I have a sense that you are saying, you may correct me, that maybe the previous minister or this current minister has not done any performance to yourself. Maybe it's the sense that I'm getting. Perhaps Minister is here also, maybe she would assist us in responding to that. As for the serious issue with the issue of litigation and your overspending, you have a high number of litigations as you have stated, Chair. Perhaps if you could give us more detail, what are the reasons of the litigation? Number two, I see on the slide there's an issue of reduction of staff. The other issue that I wanted to check, because you are saying that you, at times you don't have staff, but you are reducing staff, again you don't have staff to do certain things. What are the reasons for that? And I see that when it comes to human capital, in terms of your financials, you have a lot of money that you spend within human capital, but you are talking about reduction and you have a shortfall. Perhaps if you can take us through for that. My other questions will follow, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. To the acting chair, I just want to say they started with a disclaimer not to bring women. No women in their decision. The other disclaimer is that your presentation is not numbered. Those are two disclaimers. Chairperson, what I wanted to put forward is the fact that when your targets are not smart, you will always have a reason not to perform. You must plan something that is achievable, that is measurable. All the smart choices must be taken care of. You have brought to our attention that there was no performance management system. So we were just performing or not performing. To me, that means there were no performance contracts signed. Correct me if I'm wrong. There were no performance bonuses paid. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I have an experience that if us as members of portfolio committees, we are not playing our oversight role, we will be mentioned in those commissions as captured members of committees. So this must not happen under our watch. We are advising the minister and the department to have this performance management system in place, because we are also mentioned in the in your legislative framework that we as but we also have a role to play. If the minister, if the National Assembly, we are quoted here in your legislative framework that we must make sure that there is this system so as to measure performance. I think that's what I wanted to highlight, Chair. The other speaker has talked on the issue of litigation that I also highlighted in my questions here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, greetings to the ICASA team. I think I concur with my honourable members that your first thing, Jay, I was speaking to members there at this site, that you've got three men that are here to present to us. There's not even one woman in those positions, which simply states that we don't follow the regulation of gender equality, of which that is very important in the government space. I think we have to point that out first. And Chairperson, I'm partly answered on the issue of performance. But I just out of curiosity, I wanted to know when you get your budget, that's how you align your KPIs. And according to what your budget was and the KPIs, it seems as if you were too ambitious on your KPIs, not looking at the budget that you have. Then you're shooting yourself on the feet, because it's your budget, it's your KPIs, and you are the ones who are doing the target. So how then do you come up with a reason of saying because of the program being underfunded, a decision was taken not to execute a project? That I think maybe you will have to come up with another reason of how you did not achieve a KPI, because your budget is aligned with the KPIs that you have. And I concur with my honourable members on the issue of, I think it's a real concern, on the issue of litigation that they have. It's a serious problem, Chairperson. I think they must attend to it, and as an entity, make sure that you minimize on that, and on how you procedurally, how you do your processes, and so that you minimize any litigations that might come, because then it affects also your budgeting. But we can't ambush everything, Chairperson. I was taken by the understandings where you were cutting, you were limiting your traveling costs, and the conferences and meetings, having them outside, you decided at least you might then focus on having the conferences and meetings. That shows leadership, because once you see that you are suffering the fundings, maybe your funding is not meeting up to your KPI, then you have to cut on some of the traveling and spending of your meetings. And but another concern, focusing is on the financial risk where they are listed, licensing of high demand spectrum. Yeah, it's a concern. That first paragraph that you wrote there, it tells us that we might not even get there where we want to go in terms of the spectrum. So then we must get a proper reasoning of what are further steps that we are willing to do, what is it that we can help with, so that we understand where you are and where you want us to take you. I think that is very important, because what you have listed there, those are very, very important projects that you should be focusing on, but due to financial constraints, you can't. So then it tells us that, which means we still have a long way to go in terms of that. But maybe just to, when I'm summarizing, on my last point, maybe I would, with your indulgence, Chairperson, that we heard that the council did not sign any performance reports or performance. So what maybe we can get is from the previous minister, have they raised this before in the previous committee and in the fifth parliament? And what was the progress report? Maybe if we get that first, before we come to the current minister, because we can't then expect the minister to respond maybe on matters that were raised on the fifth parliament, and maybe they were not there was not even a process, or maybe we should get that report first, Chair, and see then how do we go about it. Thank you.
To assist that in the presentation itself, it's noted that that's not a problem of this parliament, but this has been a problem even in the fifth parliament. Right? Yeah, so I'm just saying that at least we now know that there's that problem. Who was to follow? McKenzie, Honorable McKenzie.
Chairperson. Thank you, Doc, for the presentation. In terms of at the last meeting, we had a huge delegation from various entities, and in fact, the comment I made the comment that I think it was Bill Gates that said, if you I might be misquoting him, but if you attend a meeting and you don't speak, you shouldn't be at the meeting. So perhaps, given that we appoint ICASA councillors and we appoint the senior leadership of this organisation, is in fact us that are to blame for the lack of gender representativity, not the gentleman here. So thank you for the size of your delegation, and I would urge you not to add to the delegation merely to appear correct. In terms of your funding constraints, there's a brief reference made to it in your presentation. About how this is affecting the assignment and allocation of spectrum. That is the burning question for this industry. The Minister's issued you a directive. When are you going to start the process of auctioning off the spectrum? Clearly you have a lot of leeway with which to work within that directive, so I would imagine that the allocation to the woman wouldn't stop you releasing the spectrum generally, would it? I mean, for auction, other aspects of that spectrum. I found the comment on the amount of money set aside for litigation interesting, given that Minister Tuele, of course, and yourselves were embroiled in litigation over auctioning of spectrum, and I admire your your intention to unblock the industry in that way. Given that in order to have announced the auction in the way you did, you must have done some homework before that. You must have invested some money in preparing the auction and the details of the auction and that sort of thing. So there was an element of work that had already been done on that. How much of that can you then bring across to the process that you have unfolding now, which has been freed thanks to the minister? How much of that work can you bring across? And frankly, give me a day.
Far away. You see, sabotage. Look, give me a day.
No, I'm speaking Czech. So just in terms of that, give me a date, guys. When can we announce that spectrum auction to the industry? And if it is money that's stopping you doing that, if we look at, you know, I'm not going to rehash the stats about the World Bank contribution to economic growth or what Vodacom or MTN or Telcom can bring to our economy that we so desperately need in terms of that growth, how the allocation of spectrum can literally take the chains of our economy. When are you going to do that, and how much money do you still need from government? If it is money that's stopping you doing that, how much exactly do you need? Then in terms of your targets, I think Dr. Yu said that they've been all over the place over the years, and you can see that how they spiked. One of the things I learned when I came to Parliament is that your target setting needs to be smart. Is that variance all the time as a result of not using the smart technique when setting your targets? That's me done. Thank you. Yes, thank you. Just one other thing, Minister. As the Minister of Communications, I noticed the SABC was here earlier on, and now the SABC have left. And I would argue, in fact, that this ICASA presentation is probably the most important part of this committee meeting today, and the SABC are not here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Mullah.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think Honourable McKenzie wanted to appear on TV. Unfortunately, SABC has left. Yeah, thanks. I'm going to start first with the... because, you know, it's very difficult to engage with ICASA, firstly, because we don't have the necessary tools to evaluate you. If there's no performance agreement, it means we are just evaluating on the basis of what you are presenting, which for me is a bit problematic, because we are doing the evaluation on the measure. Even the money that you say you're looking for, it's your own prediction, in my view, because there's no basis. but let's, for purposes of this meeting, let's just work on what you presented. In your expenditure report, you... let me start with it. In terms of this report, you have spent your performance is at 15.7. Am I correct? So you have not spent the money that you said you are going to spend, because in terms of the first quarter report, you're supposed to spend 25%. It's a quarter of 100, isn't it? So already your finances are saying you are not spending, but you need money. It's okay, I understand you need money, but you are not spending. the second comment, I'm interested in this data service market review, because I think the President of the Republic has pronounced on this matter that we need to find a way of reducing the cost of communication. Now, everything that is reported here is that we need money for us to do this. We need money. But from where I'm sitting, I don't know if Chair, I'm correct, but the general public needs a solution, a quick solution on this particular matter, because we can't talk about the release of spectrum or communications, but when people don't have access. So I think this is a very burning issue in my view. And experience from other countries, what are they saying? Do we really need to establish a research unit to do this? Or because there's a lot of people who have done research all over the world around this issue of data cost. So we should be saying, this is our baseline even before we do the research, but from where we're sitting, this is the information that we have gathered on our own as ICASA, and so far we just need to finalize the research, but research is available. I think even the Honorable McKenzie can do that research. Yeah, and then the other area that I think we also need to talk to, your CFO spoke about commitments. How much is committed? You're just saying this doesn't mean there's no commitments, but you're not saying the 15% includes so much percent of commitment so that we can go and verify whether I'm not saying you're not telling us the truth. But if you just say there's commitment and then you end there, it becomes very difficult for us to do a proper assessment. If you can just take us through a percentage at least of that commitment so that we can compare it to the 15%. And maybe the other point, from your report, you are actually saying your organization is not financially sustainable. Yeah, thanks. Also on the, there's also a rollover for the 5 million. And your accruals of 15 million in terms of your report. Can you just elaborate on that? Why you have such huge amounts of money as rollovers? Because we need to know. You can't say you want money, but you are rolling over 45 million into another financial year. So where I'm sitting, I get worried. These guys actually have money. Because that money that they roll over, they could have utilized it for particularly data service market review. Because that's where I'm more interested. The issue of the spectrum, I think it has been raised, let me not repeat it. Your main reasoning of underperformance in those areas is largely on being underfunded. I don't think it's justifiable because you are the ones who are doing your own targets, remember. So you did the target that does not match the money you have. I think one colleague of mine raised that point. I just need to emphasize that. So if you say we are underperforming because we don't have money. But you knew in the previous financial year that you are not having that money. You still budgeted for something that you don't have. Something is not right there from where I'm sitting. But it's a point that you need to note and respond and say, if in the last financial year you did not have this budget, how then did you budget for something that you did not have? So maybe it couple that with the rollover so that you can do the explanation. Maybe my last point is just to emphasize on the performance agreement, because from where I'm sitting, I think Honorable McKenzie tried to capture it, but he left it halfway, that actually it's this committee that appoints you, but you report both to the committee and the ministry. Now, I think we must be, all of us must be clear who's supposed to deal with this performance. If it's the minister, let it be clear that it's the minister who's going to deal with your performance. It's the one who's going to monitor your performance. So let's not make the committee and the minister and you a confusion so that we don't know who's doing what. It is the minister that is supposed to, on behalf of the committee, monitor you. Let it be specific so that we are clear. But we also need to know from your side, because you've been working, you find reports of other ICASAs. Did you initiate any process of saying, because nothing is coming out of the performance, this is what we propose we are going to do, and get the views of the minister or the committee and say, for this financial year, this is what we are going to do from your side, because you are technocrats. Possibly you can draft something and present it to the committee or the minister, whoever is responsible, so that you, on your part, you are saying, we have also done something after looking at the situation that we are just working without monitoring, no performance review, nothing. At least we are getting paid for doing our own key performance area. Literally, you are just looking at the policy and align. So maybe from your side also, take the initiative. If there's a delay, take initiatives and say, committee, this is what we think we're going to do. This is how you can evaluate us. And then we can also work on the basis of that, just the baseline, not necessarily meaning that what you present will be what we agree to. It's just something to work on. But I'm a bit worried, so we need to clear this thing of performance agreement. Otherwise, the whole discussion then becomes a farce, because we're discussing something that we are unable to evaluate on anything, because this is what you just presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Also, let me acknowledge, it was at the end of the day, I'm sure the committee have tried to push and push to say we wanted to hear something from the side of the ICASA. And indeed, they've tried to respond, because it won't be okay. All other entities are being monitored and understand that what are they are doing, in order that we must play also that the oversight role. But definitely, as we were raising that issue of saying in this budget, it's us as Honorable McKean saying appointing and doing whatsoever, but it's a wish indeed, just to have a little bit of a mixture there. But I think when time goes on, it will be noted on a serious note that thing. So what I want to understand, under the financial risk, indeed, are you saying all these key critical things that you have raised, it can be just a poopo, because other things are being assisted by the issue of the budget. So now are you raising and also saying you don't have something that can do whatever that we want to achieve on these four key things that you have raised. It's my question. And if it's like that, consider, as we are raising, I don't want to repeat it on the side of the litigation matter, to say, I Pumulang, Zamukwela, in order that you must balance. But already you have tried to show us to say, even if it's something frustrating on the other side, you are trying to come with those measures, as you were trying to explain what are you doing in order that you must reduce those challenges that you are having by attending the meetings in your regional offices and whatsoever. But indeed, I wanted to raise this one, Ubuti. At the end of the day, this needs to be happened, but we need to assist one another, or nishele nifuna in kahle. At the end of the day, to us, the issue of the spectrum is a priority for our communities. So indeed, we don't want to see in these 5 years being failed the community. So indeed, something needs to be done. And I would never ever understand on the side of want to overspend whilst you don't have anything in your pocket, but you want to overspend. Take note about that. Thank you, Chief.
I think as we give an opportunity to respond, I would ask the minister to speak later so that we just get the other questions cleared.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, honorable members. The issue of litigation. It is real as it sounds. And ICASA Council is very mindful of the significance of capping our litigation costs. However, there is an inherent risk in this, especially saying this in a public platform where even industry is listening. If ICASA fails to defend its public interest mandate through litigation, we might as well close shop. We are in a highly litigious environment. We find a licensee. Before the end of the day, we received court papers. We don't know how long that court case will last, and to what extent will it go. We don't have anyone who can litigate on our behalf. It's either ICASA litigates in defense of the public interest mandate, or it does not, and that very public interest mandate suffers. It's global practice. Go to the US, you go to the UK, regulators often, more often than not, find themselves in this litigation quagmire. Even the spectrum process that honorable members want prioritized, much as ICASA wants it prioritized, there are chances that that process may be litigated by industry or by anyone for that matter. The Honorable Minister issues a policy directive in line with Section 35A of the ECA. She has done her part. No one will litigate the policy directive. Wait until the day ICASA moves and gives it life. I'm just illustrating the reality of where we find ourselves. We live in a very expressive democracy. Industry knows its rights, consumers and all members of the public. So that is the reality that we find ourselves in. And we try at all times. But we also don't want to capture ourselves, if I can put it that way, or to be demobilized, perhaps that's the right word. We are demobilized by fear of litigation, because that will render us to be a toothless regulator. It would mean in how we go about making decisions, we factor in the potential of litigation, and we take decisions that we think will not land us in court. And that cannot happen, at least in the public interest. So if ICASA needs money, before we get into other issues around performance indicators and targets and so forth, but if ICASA needs money to expand on its litigation capabilities, failure to attend to that renders our regulatory efforts redundant. There's an issue raised on Spectrum. We received some 5 weeks or 6 weeks or so, received the policy directive from the Honorable Minister, and as dictated to by the ECA, we have to consider that. And ICASA is busy considering the policy directive in three phases. There is a technical analysis, there is an economic analysis, and a legal analysis of the policy directive that the minister has given us. We need to satisfy all these key components, because subsequent to the issuance of the policy directive, it falls squarely within the realm of ICASA. Now, I think as directors in exercising our responsibilities, we need beyond reasonable doubt, so that if the minister comes and say, hey, I had proposed that you buy apples, and ICASA, you bought bananas instead, we should be able to prove the internal logic that informed either the buying of apples or the decision to go and acquire bananas. It's a very informed process, and therein also lies the need for thoroughness, because it can be the basis for the very litigation I've referred to. Now, you requested the Honorable McKenzie, I'm trying to club responses where they relate to the same topic. You requested the issue of timelines. What I can announce is that in the third quarter, which starts next month in October, the third quarter of the year, we will be issuing within the third quarter an information memorandum. An information memorandum is a document that gives industry and all stakeholders an idea of the envisaged approach ICASA intends to undertake in the licensing of spectrum. And that information memorandum solicits inputs. No law or act compels us to go that route. But mindful of the highly litigious environment that we find ourselves in, we have decided as the Council of ICASA to go the information memorandum route in the spirit and interest of transparency, so that no one can claim to be surprised by the outcome of the process or of the licensing process. At least an information memorandum would deal with, you know, those aspects of what is it that we consider you know, to auction, what is it that we, you know, consider, you know, to go the wholesale open access network route, what is it that's contained in the policy directive, you know, how do we embrace the policy directive, all of those. We have set up a process of an information memorandum, and that, I can commit today, will be issued in the third quarter, which is just commencing next month onwards. I hope in terms of timelines it gives some idea of what is next. There's an issue of staff, reduction of staff, perhaps, you know, if I simplify the high wage bill, you know, where the bulk of our monies go to paying staff and so forth. We rely squarely on the intellectual capital of our employees. ICASA is actually, over the years, we are more like a training ground for industry. We employ, we give experience, we train, industry poaches, brings you know, good salaries because they have got, you know, those capabilities and poach our staff members. Simply because either we can't keep up with those offers or this ever-increasing, you know, financial budget constraints and so forth restrict our employees' ability to fulfill even their potential and career development. So we wish, but we cannot avoid that. We are a service-based organization, and even when you look at other organizations within our space, Competition Commission and so forth, you'd find more or less the same dynamics because of the nature of the organization we lead. We try, where possible, when someone resigns and we realize we can repurpose employees to fulfill the same task, we've been doing it over the years. We've done it even before we received the correspondence from the minister advising and urging us to do the same. We've been doing it. The issue of performance management system, Honorable Mulala, the act is clear. The act is clear, is prescriptive on how the performance management system ought to be developed. There's an issue I had honorable members raising that, but what is it that we did? We have letters. We were communicating with Minister Mutambi on this matter. We have those letters. We were communicating with Minister Dodo. We communicated with Minister Kubai. We communicated with Minister Mukonyan. And we are communicating with the Minister Ndabeni Abrams. That is the objective reality. ICASA, at all times, we are like a school learners or children in a classroom who've been knocking in the principal's door to say, sir, we will behave even in your absence, but please remember that we need you in class sometimes, if I can give that kind of an example. And I want to make it very clear, colleagues, that even if we had acted delinquent over the past 3 or 4 years, ICASA did not perform, did not achieve anything contrary to this growing performance. Unfortunately, in the absence of a performance management system, we would never be held accountable. But without blowing our own trumpets, let's rejoice that even in the absence of a performance management system, ICASA's performance has been growing, and as I said earlier, from 29% we've been growing, we are now above 90% of annual performance targets achieved in the absence of that. So I think it speaks to just the work ethic and the determination that members of council have in saving the public of South Africa. So for others, I will hand over to the CEO to just touch on others, targets being smart and so forth. But I was just trying to give a summary on some of the points which have been raised. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think perhaps just to close off on the performance management system issue, and just to make it clear that that impacts council. So from an organizational perspective, from the CEO down, council has an approved performance management policy that's in place to monitor the performance of all executives and employees. I think this talks directly to the question that was raised about whether bonuses have been paid or not. The payment of bonuses to staff is informed by the organizational performance management policy. However, council is obviously subject to the parliamentary or the legislative framework. If I can comment on the smartness, Chair, and the targets, I think I take the point around smartness. The one thing that I would like to emphasize is that we are working with a 5-year strategic plan. This year is the last year of the strategic plan. And the AG has flagged a number of areas relating to smartness of our target. Over the years, we have improved. However, we're facing a challenge that it has not been possible for us to drop targets halfway through the strategic planning period.
as we move into the new planning period for the next financial year. The next financial year is the first year where we're coming up with a new strat plan. I think we will be able to resolve most of the issues that have been raised in respect of the plan that we've currently been working on. Chair, there was a question raised regarding data services market inquiry. And I think, Chair, the one comment was that there has been research done in the past, and can't we rely on that research? Indeed, Chair, I think even from an ICASA perspective, in the previous parliament, we actually presented some of the research we've done, which is effectively the benchmarking between South Africa and other countries to assess how we compare. However, in terms of the legislation, before we can impose a price or compel operators to drop prices, we have to undertake a market review, and that market review goes into detailed analysis of the cost structures that informs what is being charged. We cannot say because the prices in this other jurisdiction are at this level, South Africa should also be at that level, because there are differences in jurisdictions. So in some countries, perhaps they don't have the spectrum constraints that in this market industry claims to have. The income levels might be different. The topography levels might be different, which informs the cost structure of what ultimately informs the prices that the market charges. So this market review analysis is going into the details of obtaining the costing information from operators, which exercise we have completed. In the coming quarter, we will be issuing a discussion document outlining what we believe the next steps ought to be. And ultimately, we will get to a space where, as we did with voice, we may end up with some kind of price regulation. And we're working very closely with the Competition Commission as they are also just finalizing their final report on the data services market inquiry that they undertook. There was also a question raised by Honorable Mackenzie about the work that was done in 2016 on the spectrum. So that work is indeed not lost. So we're using it as a base, as the acting chair indicated that in the coming quarter we will be coming out with an information memorandum. It's informed by some of the work that was done at that time, and we have had now to revisit that work in light of the policy directive that has been issued, and hopefully in the next quarter indeed we will produce something. But that work has been quite valuable because it still gives us a sound base on which to proceed. So I think I'll pause here and allow the CFO to deal with the financial questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. And honourable members, maybe if you allow me, Chair, to start with the background, especially on the spectrum budget, the issue that was raised to say how much did we actually have. Members, yes, we did present before to the Parliament, but I think it's proper that I provide this background so that members are familiar with what actually transpired over the years. So ICASA, the amount I alluded to earlier, to say we used to close our books with more than 300 million. So included in the 300 million is a total amount of 123 million that was taken back by National Treasury. And in actual fact, when we're still arguing with National Treasury to say no, this amount we actually needed, provided the background including this deliverable, Treasury said no, actually you must also bring back the interest that you gained during the process after year end. So with us returning the 124 million back to National Treasury as demanded, we then saw us having a serious challenge in terms of some of these projects, because if you look at spectrum auction, we had a total amount of 36 million that was earmarked in that year for this project in 2016. So with that amount being sent back to National Treasury, it means now we are going to have a challenge. Included in this amount was exactly the 8 million that we have actually budgeted to execute the phase of that project. With now the delays and everything that actually transpired, now we were forced now to actually close our books without that amount being committed. There's a process that we call the retention of funds from National Treasury. What is required there for you to argue the retention of funds is a commitment in the form of an agreement or a signed document to say this is the amount I need to retain to put to National Treasury. At the time for this project, we did not have that. Included in that is actually the amount that we have actually planned for the office relocation. It's proper that I link all of these things because they talk to the 45 million that honorable member raised. So that amount was not committed at that, during that financial year. Then when we were in the process of relocating or finalizing the processes, in that financial year, that's when the treasurer said, no, you don't have a lease agreement signed for this particular project. Therefore, you must also bring back that money and relocate using your own allocation. And we were comfortable by the fact that we were promised that we are not going to have a budget cut in that year. Yes, I got shocked in December when I received the revised allocation letter, where I was also informed that in addition to the 124 million that was returned, you are also going to serve a 52 million budget cut over the MTS period. That simply means you are no longer going to plan the way you intended to plan. So we then had to reprioritize some of the programs within of which we did. Luckily for projects like Cost to Communicate, the amount was already committed in that financial year. Hence, we saw us finalizing the first report. So the following financial year, then we were also informed to say, some of your OPEX budget, I'm talking about contracts that are already committed and signed, you must actually finance those ones from your allocation. There was an amount of 10.2 million that we had to return back to National Treasury by the end of November. Yes, we tried to argue that, but unfortunately we were not successful. So that simply meant that when I closed my books, I need to now start prioritizing those contracts because I need to honor those contracts before I can start thinking of new projects in the next financial year, which actually saw us closing our books with a total amount of 94 million that was requested, and I only had 45 million in my bank. So when I went to council to say, I can only afford this much, I need to reprioritize these ones in the next year's budget, that's the same amount we said from the allocation. After taking out your employees' budget, then you need to actually allocate these projects into the next APP that can be funded from the next financial year allocation. So linking that to the issue that was raised to say your KPAs are not aligned to budget, I'm happy you raised that issue, Honorable Member. In actual fact, tomorrow we are having a workshop with National Treasury. We've been raising that issue with National Treasury to say, our processes are not aligned. They don't run parallel. You start a budgeting process way ahead before you start the APP process, the strategy process. You close and finalize the APP process in November, which is the National Treasury process. But the budgeting process is still running. And guess what? With the current financial constraints that Treasury is experiencing, you get an additional letter in December that will also show you like what happened last year, where they said, in addition to the 54 million we took, we are going to take 26 million again in the next 3 years. So there, with that being said, we already have a draft that is actually submitted. You now have January to start and find ways of reducing or removing some of your critical targets on the APP. We use Q4, which is April to May, to start now aligning our budget to those KPIs that we intend to actually execute in the next financial year. That allows us also an opportunity to do the cost-benefit analysis, where you can say this amount that is budgeted is sufficient to cover my KPIs in the next financial year. Unfortunately, that process was only finalized on the 26th when I went to council on the 28th. I had those shortfalls, hence we actually had to present those mitigating factors. And now it's already late to actually start saying we need to take out some of these KPIs on the APP. Hence we said, some of this, because it's an internal issue, some of these projects will execute internally. That came with challenges to say, ICASA is unique in nature because you don't have another ICASA within the country. For you to get benchmark information, you need to go outside the country, which comes at the cost. Yes, we do use other reports from our neighboring countries, as indicated. We do have a fully-fledged research division, but for them to have the basis for them to do their research, there are platforms that we need to pay that money to for us to access the basic information that will enable us to come up with a research document that is being tabled. So those are some of the reasons that we said we really need to have a meeting with our National Treasury wherein we indicate the challenges we are experiencing. And these budget cuts that are not are being implemented over the years will actually see ICASA not being able to execute the mandate, because right now I'm sitting at 71% going to salaries. And that actually, if you look at the baseline that we use, is the allocations that we receive on an annual basis. So the more you reduce it, the more the percentage goes to salaries. Then you are unable to even finance some of your operational costs from that allocation. I think I responded to most of the issues that were raised, except one issue on the 15%. So the 45 million that we had was already committed, but in terms of the payments, some of those payments are actually delayed. We'll occur in Q3 and Q4. Hence, I said, it's already committed, but we are just managing our cash flow because we can't spend something that we don't have. So we are just trying to manage the cash flow just to make sure that we don't end up with an overdraft that is not allowed in public sector. So the 15%, yes, will still be committed, spent later on because it's committed. However, we still need to make sure that the little we have, we are monitoring on a quarterly basis and is within the allocation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. President, and good afternoon, honorable members. Apologies for joining the meeting late. I just want to report one thing first, that we have not seen this presentation as a department. It was not been sent to us, sent straight to Parliament. And honorable members, I believe it's done so because ICASA says they account to Parliament. Despite the fact that, as you're listening to the presentation, that they have issues that we must, for example, they request extra funding that we must not see what that they're going to spend on and how far have they gone, which is why even after the amount that they reported on that we've given to them, the quarterly report we didn't see. And when you go to Treasury in terms of the expenses by the department, we're expected to say indeed ICASA did what it was supposed to do. This is the reality that you are faced with, because honorable members, you are the appointing authority and our oversight body, that we really need to be upfront from the beginning of the time to say these relations and this independence that we give to the entities that we establish as Parliament through the recommendation of government in order to meet the priorities of the country, do they really serve the purpose that it's supposed to? In understanding that when we said entities are independent, both this government and Parliament that establish the entities with such laws, did it mean that they're exempted from the normal accounting processes that people are supposed to be following? So I'm raising this, honorable members, because like now, I know we received a request, I think it was just of last week, ICASA requires extra funding for spectrum. We still do not know how is the policy directive going to be taken forward. We still do not know what's the process that's going to be allowed. We hear it from the first time, as the chair says, in the third quarter, they are planning to do this. And we're expected to go and fund ICASA. We're taking money from the department. And unfortunately, honorable members, I want to stand in front of you here to say, we will do no such as the department. We have to, as we go to Treasury, to say these are the commitments as we presented in Parliament, and therefore this is the money that Treasury has approved. If we're going to make any shift, because it means we're going to not meet other targets, we're shifting funds from certain targets to provide to ICASA, we have to know what ICASA does with the money that goes to it, that is appropriated through the department. The second question, the second issue that I want to talk to honorable members is on the issue of the performance system. The acting chair is very correct. That's what the law says. If you read section 6A of ICASA, it reads as follows. The evaluation of the performance of the chairperson or any other councillor must be conducted by a panel constituted by the minister in consultation with the National Assembly. And now this minister has taken over in November. In February, ICASA sends a letter to this minister to say minister will request salary increase and all that. And the minister highlights in her response that yes, we do hear that, but we need to see the performance agreement. The minister is not like she has not received the report. I have received the report from the staff that there's no performance agreement that has been sent because of whatever differences. Minister Vumazongi is here to talk to that because he has been there. There is the framework that was established that lapsed in 2014. I want us to understand that. The performance agreement framework that was there, it was up to 2014. But as the acting chair correctly puts it, the performance agreements are based on the government priorities that MTSF that I'm talking about and APPs Therefore, it can never be very difficult to say, as much as we're still waiting for the new minister or whoever that was there in Parliament to develop this frame, this system, but in the meantime, we have this in existence so that we comply with the law like we've been doing in other things. There's lots of things that we have not managed to catch up in terms of updating, but we really did not say we're going to fold our arms. For example, currently, we have not signed shareholder compacts with the entities because that's the review of the process and the reconfiguration of the state. By the time we go inside, we must be certain. These are the things that are expected. And it's a standard process that everybody gets to know. And as I go to the issue once more, on the issue that we're concerned about the litigation costs, and the acting chair once more correctly puts it, that we operate in a very highly litigious place or space, I guess ours is to follow the process and the law. That is why at all times we have to be clear when we communicate. It becomes bad, honourable members, once more, as we talk about defending the public interest, that we lose all the cases when we spend it, or we lose majority because we're defending the public interest. It tells that there is a gap on certain things that we need to do right without us compromising that we stand for in terms of developing, of protecting the public interest. We've got, I remember one of the cases, I was still Deputy Minister to Minister Karim. One of the cases was in relation to the cost to communicate. I remember Dr. Parenza used to engage with them when he was regulatory, or he was already in Vodacom, when they were questioning how ICASA has gone about. And we said to the then counsel of ICASA, before you take this thing to court, make sure that you've applied your mind. I even said, if I was minister, I was going to make sure that if you lose this case, you pay it out of your own pocket. ICASA lost the case, but we were fortunate because the court at least was able to say, address certain things that we wanted to be achieved. But in terms of the process, we did not win it. And these are the things, as the new administration that we're talking about, in terms of consequence management, that we can't simply, because let's say ICASA goes and do something against the policy directive and they just go and take them to court without exploring that rationale that they are talking about. Every time we think about going to court, because this is the taxpayers' money, we should be able to say, I've checked everything, like I did with the policy directive. Well, there were proposals that were there, and I was like, yes, I know ICASA is going to jump and take us to court on this area. We've got to make sure that we don't overstep our money and encroach into ICASA's space. In ICASA's space. We could have been taken to litigation. It's not like the policy directive can be taken to court. If we have overstepped our money, they would have, that I know for certain. So it's the thing that the application of the processes, that's very important. So we've delayed the allocation of spectrum because we're litigated all the time, because we missed on the basic things in terms of the processes that we follow. So it's important. Now, it's been 25 years. We should have learned in the past mistakes. Of course, we last issued spectrum in 1993. The big one, when I say, like the one that is coming now. And therefore, it was a group that was there. There hasn't been any other thing that has happened except for the small bands that has come out. So as much as something we learn from the past, but we also have to, as the chair correctly put it, that importance of alignment with government priorities. And unfortunately, government priorities are set up by the minister of honourable members. The minister with the cabinet that he and parliament approves. If ICASA does not see the need thereof to engage with that shareholder minister, besides the letters that we sent, because on the letters we didn't even talk about that. The minister raised that, as I'm saying, because we were talking about salary increases, to say there's this process that must be played. And when ICASA said, can we meet with the minister, said, send draft. Because we are confident that they know that it's based on APP. And as I said, there was no APP developed by February. We were working towards the new one, which is the one that we're saying we're taking each other to court because the minister has not given us money and this and that. These are the things, honourable members, that give us, as government and our parastatals, a bad name out there, that make people to say, I don't want to work for government, or I don't have confidence in government. The failure to engage constructively, irrespective of who is in office, understanding that public interest that we talk about, that the parliament represents the public. I always say that when I engage with all the entities. When they say the public, I'm like, the people that represent the public that are voted for in parliament by the public is parliament. So you can never have a higher interest more than what parliament has. And as I said, Chairperson, I want to request in front of yourselves as the appointing authority that you try to make sure that we find ways of working together with ICAS. I'm appealing to yourselves now. But secondly, I mentioned earlier as also there's this concern over the cost that you are paying over staffing. In the last time we were here, we were talking about the reconfiguration of the portfolio in order to respond, amongst other things, the fourth industrial revolution and the need to build a capable state at all levels. And that also talks to the kind of the regulator that will require thereof that must be responsive in the space. There's lots of resolutions from the governing party. Cabinet expressed, and I did brief yourselves that Minister Gordon and his team is working on the framework. Therefore, we may be seeing changes that we propose, but of course, it is Parliament that finally takes a decision on what law that must be approved. So we will be presenting our case. Even looking at the fact that do we really need to have 9 full-time councillors at ICASA at a DDG level, that now we must increase our salaries probably to a DDG level. 9 full-time and executives that are there. These are the things that we have to look at when we talk about trying to make sure that when we use the public path, we use it effectively, but most importantly, we get to see value for every cent that we're spending. If we're saying 75%, it's scary, honestly. It's so scary. So what is that we need to do without compromising the quality of the work that must be done? That we want to achieve, that is a government priority, can be done by 20 people, but effective in ABCD. It's about how we do it, as we also march towards the appointment of the new councillors, the kind of skills, because if we miss it now in terms of looking at the kind of skills that we require at ICASA for it to be responsive, we would have missed an opportunity. So those things that we have to look into, the entire ecosystem, what is that we need to do? The same way we say the kind of legislator that we need, the kind of regulator that we need, but that we want as an outcome for the country, of course, based on the governing party's manifesto and commitment to the people. I would pause there, Chairperson. Minister Mazwenga was there, so what transpired with Minister Mutambi and the former ministers, he can give account to that. Thank you.
I'm not sure how long will that be, because we are now at 10 to 2 and there's you may try to summarize but lose us in the process. I think that's my worry. Right. May I suggest something that probably would need that submission so that we have an opportunity to go through it, prepare ourselves in that regard. Is that great? So that we don't take a presentation now on what transpired and so on. But maybe get ready. I see your hands up.
I was to propose that we defer the minutes to the next meeting.
Yeah.
That's a proposal.
No, I'll just indicate why I would disagree with that just in a few minutes. But I just wanted us to resolve on this one, so that at least we are clear on this. Okay, fine. If we are clearer on it, I also don't want us to leave the meeting as though we said ICASA shouldn't do anything. I think we have now clarity on where the gaps are. And we need to work on those gaps. Part of it is the relationship issue. I'm saying when I say relationship, not between ICASA and the minister, but also with parliament. So that we also know our role to play, minister. Otherwise, we should accept it that it has been a contravention of this act over a long period of time in terms of what has been expected. So we need to, I think, fix that part. So I don't want a situation where it's like, if anything was to come, minister, no, because of that meeting, we cannot act or defend or anything. But members are very clear try other means before we get to a court process or litigation process. That's part of reducing the cost in that regard. I don't think it's to say we'd leave things to chance. So let's just be clear on that. But the committee is clear that the part about spectrum release and that is a matter we see it as urgent, given that it's a priority in this term of office. And the sooner we sort out the matters that cause that delay, I think the better. So if we agree that that's the case, at least we would have handled this part. But I see, I see a microphone now.
No,
okay. Yes, I see your hand is up, so I can't continue. Yes, that's what I'm doing.
No, I wanted to make a proposal.
Chair, after listening to all the whatever we have said in the committee meeting, I think we need to have a further discussion with ICASA. Maybe time would not permit us now, but we need to have further discussion because I am very much concerned about the relation that is there currently between the department and ICASA and Parliament. So I want us to refer this meeting to another date. And that's what you will fear data, because my concern is, Chair, you know, I've got, before we were MPs, we were administrators as well. On the issue of litigation, I want us to go into that with that regard. But I think the minister has captured me somehow. On the issue of performance agreement, I think Honorable Molale has covered me to say that we're sitting with ICASA based on what we don't know. We're measuring them when there's no performance agreement. On the issue of spectrum, I think on this one, President, Minister, they have pronounced it's an issue of urgency, as you have alluded, Chair. You know, one thing that I've seen in the report, who ICASA has treated directly, I understand they are independent, but the minister is a member. I've seen they have written and requesting funds from Treasury. Ne? And again, the minister is saying that she's not aware of this report. And I think it will be a wrong precedent for us as a committee to accept this report until ICASA meets with the minister. Thanks, Chair.
I think that's covered in the summary as far as I'm concerned. Yes. We started from a point of relations. The only thing we're trying to also manage is the nature of the meeting. I think we should also look at that quite carefully so that we know what needs to be done also outside of the meeting to get those other issues sorted out. I also don't want us to move as though there was no meeting, because there was a meeting and that's why we're still discussing. Otherwise it will go down as wrong. So I'm just saying, if we agree on that summary, it means that we will still have to have that discussion. But at least we have now identified where the challenges are. And we are committed to resolving them because we all have public interest. I think that's where we are. That when we communicate to South Africans, we must show that we are moving forward. Can we agree that that's how we have written this presentation? I know then you have that proposal. On that proposal, I thought that with ICASA, we are done. Right? So that they don't get held up on that matter. The part about the minutes, we have tried to move over minutes to the other meetings. We have circulated the minutes. Members have read, they've made corrections. The only thing we would need to get is whether there are issues raised on the minutes or approved them. Let me tell you the logic of it. Is that we have made resolutions. Part of what we have discussed is that we need to have our resolutions in an action form and that we can make progress reports. Otherwise, we'll continue to take decisions we cannot make follow-up. But when the minutes have not been approved, we just talked about litigation now. There may be an issue that gets raised. On what basis do you say that resolution was a resolution? Because the next meeting could have amended the minutes. So if there's no amendment, I think that's where you need to assist me. If there are no amendments to the minutes, we take them as approved because they're circulated, we have received corrections, so that at least on record, the minutes of the 21st, 27th have been approved. Agreed? Okay, Mulala?
Yeah, Chairperson, I think the minutes are all right. The only thing is the spelling correction by Honorable McKenzie has done spelling corrections. So can I move that this minute be adopted with correction?
I know that the minute, let's start the minute of the 21st. Yeah, not where the issue is.
Yeah.
That's where the corrections are, grammatical. Honorable Mulala.
Yes. Yes, that's where we are. I'm worried that Ikaza is adopting minutes with us
no,
now.
No, it's not.
That's yeah. You are released.
No, that's why we're released.
But we must release them because they are now worried whether they should stand up.
No, that's what I have said. The Ikaza presentation is done. We can release them, but I'm not entertaining the other issue now. So let's then get to the issue. So I was saving yourself time, Antoine.
Yeah.
Right now we should be done.
It's the minute of the 27th August.
Yeah. Are we agreed?
21st.
Yeah.
With the corrections presentation done. Can you get a move by the second?
Why we're not ready to exist?
All right.
I'm seconding the chairperson raised by
So the question was just on the name, not on the minutes of the question. Same correction of the spelling. Move
on. I move chair.
Kumbu second. The last one. No corrections, sir. Move, Matos, move. Second. Mega second. Alright. That then clarifies the minutes first. As it relates to the program, we stick to the program we approved in the meeting. All other matters will sort them out. The meeting stays adjourned. You can join the house.
Oh yes, thank you so much, thank you. Thank you.